జయం విశ్వపాద పరమహంస పరివ్రాజకాచార్య అష్టోత్తరశత శ్రీ శ్రీమాన్ అభయ చరణారవింద భక్తివేదాంత గోస్వామి మహారాజ్ శ్రీల ప్రభుపాదికి జయం నతిలీలా ప్రవిష్ట విష్ణుపాద పరమహంస పరివ్రాజకాచార్య అష్టోత్తరశత శ్రీ శ్రీమాన్ భక్త సిద్ధాంత సరస్వతి మహారాజ్ శ్రీల ప్రభుపాదికి అనందగోడి వైష్ణవ బృందకి నామాచార్య శ్రీ హరిదాస్ ఠాకూర్కి ప్రేమ సహో శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధార శ్రీవాసాది గౌర భక్త బృందకి శ్రీ శ్రీ రాధాకృష్ణ గోప గోవినాథ శ్యామకుండ రాధాకుండ గిరి గోవర్ధానికి బృందావన ధామికి మాయాపూర్ ధామికి మధురపురి ధామికి జగన్నాథ్పురి ధామికి ద్వారకాపురి ధామికి గంగమాయికి యమునమాయికి తులసిదేవికి భక్తిదేవికి సామవేద భక్త బృందకి గౌర్ ప్రేమానంది ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు శ్రీ శ్రీ గురు అండ్ శ్రీ గౌరంగ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు శ్రీల ప్రభుపాద్ నమాంశుపదాయ కృష్ణ ప్రస్థాయ భూతలే శ్రీమతి భక్తివేదాంత స్వామినితి నామిని నమస్తే సరస్వతి దేవీం గౌరవాణి ప్రచారిణే నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాది పాశ్చాత్య దేశధారిణి. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. సంసార సాగరే మగ్నం దీనం మాం కరుణానిధే కర్మగ్రాహగృహీతాంగం మాముద్ధర భవార్ణవాన్. శ్రీమద్భాగవదాఖ్యోయం ప్రత్యక్ష కృష్ణమేవ హి స్వీకృతోసి మయా నాథ ముక్త్యర్థం భవ సాగరే. మనోరథే మదీయోయం సఫలా సర్వదా త్వయా నిర్విఘ్నేనైవ కర్తవ్యం దాసోహం తవ కేశవ. భవే భవే యథా భక్తి పాదయోర్స్తవ జాయతే తథా కురుష్వ దేవేశ నాథస్త్వం నో యద ప్రభో. నామ సంకీర్తనం యస్య సర్వ పాప ప్రణాశనం ప్రణామో దుఃఖ శమనం తం నమామి హరిం పరం. జన్మాద్యస్య యదోన్వయాదితరద చార్తేష్వభిజ్ఞస్వరాన్ తేనే బ్రహ్మ హృదయ ఆది కవయే ముహ్యంతి యత్ సూరయ. తేజో వారిమృదం యథా వినిమయో యత్ర త్రిసర్గో మృష ధామ్నా స్వేన సదా నిరస్తకుహగం సత్యం పరం ధీమహి. ధర్మ ప్రోజ్జిత గైదవోత్ర వరమో నర్మత్సరాణం సదాం వేద్యం వాస్తవమత్ర వస్తు శివదం తాపత్రయోన్మూలనం. శ్రీమద్భాగవతే మహాముని కృతే కింవా పరైరీశ్వర సద్యో హృద్యవరుద్యదేత్ర కృతిభి శుశ్రూషుభీ తక్షణా నిగమకల్పతరోర్గలిదం ఫలం శుకముఖాదమృతద్రవ సంయుదం పివద భాగవతం రసమాలయం ముహురహోరసిగా భువి భావుకా. సచ్చిదానందరూపాయ విశ్వోత్పత్త్యాదిహేతవే తాపత్రయ వినాశాయ శ్రీకృష్ణాయ వయం నుమా. యం ప్రవ్రజందం అనుభేదమభేదకృత్యం ద్వైపాహ్యనో విరహకాధరమజ్జుహావాం పుత్రేది తన్మైదయత్తరవోభినేదు తం సర్వభూతహృదయం మునిమానతోస్మి. యస్వానుభావమఖిల శ్రుతిసారమేకం అధ్యాత్మదీపమదితితీర్షదాం తమోందం సంసారిణాం కరుణయాః పురాణగుహ్యం తం వ్యాససూనుం ప్రయామి గురుం మునీనాం. నారాయణం నమస్కృత్య నరం చైవ నరోత్తమం దేవీం సరస్వతీం వ్యాసం తతో జయముదీరయే. కమనీయ కిశోర ముగ్ధమూర్తే కళవేణూకుణిదాతృదానందోః మమ వాచి విజృంభదాం మురారేర్మధురీం కణికాపికాపికాపి. నమామి విష్ణుపదాయ కృష్ణప్రసాయ భూతలే శ్రీమతే భక్తివేదాంత స్వామినితి నామిని నమస్తే సరస్వతి దేవీం గౌరవాణి ప్రచారిణే నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాది పాశ్చాత్యాదేశదారి ശ്രീമൽഗുരുചരണാരവിന്ദാഭ്യാം നമഃ. വന്ദേ നന്ദവ്രജസ്ത്രീണാം പാദരേണുമഭീഷ്ടശാ യാസം ഹരിഗതോദ്ഗീതം പുനാദിഭുവനത്രയം ഗോപീചരണാരവിന്ദ പരമാണവേ നമഃ. പീതാംബരം കരവിരാജിത ചക്രശംഖം കൗമോദഗീ സരസിജം കരുണാസമുദ്രം രാധാസഹായമതിസുന്ദരമന്ദഹാസം വാതാലയേഷ മനിഷം ഹൃദി ഭാവയാമി. കോമളം കൂജയൻ വേണും ശ്യാമളോയം കുമാരക വേദവേദ്യപരം ബ്രഹ്മ ഭാസദാം പുരതോ മമ. മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം. ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമ, ശ്രീമതി രാധികായേ നമ. സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദനാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ. So, yesterday we have spoken briefly about these two verses, the fourth and the fifth verse in the ninth chapter. As I mentioned before at the introduction of this chapter, that it is the one of the most important chapters in the Bhagavad Gita, this ninth chapter, because Krishna calls it as Rajavidya Rajaguhya Yogam. That's the name itself of the chapter, is Rajavidya, the king of knowledge, and Rajaguhyam, the mostly confidential. So in both ways, it is the king of knowledge as well as the most confidential of all the knowledges in the world. Brahmavidya Sarvavidyam Pratishtam. It is based on this knowledge that all other knowledges come into this world. Therefore, it is the highest of all. That's why it's called Krishna calls it as Rajavidya. So there we have seen, in the first two verses, Krishna spoke about the importance of this chapter. Is it not? First two verses, Krishna Shri Bhagavan Vacha, what did he say? He said that idam tute guhyatamam pravakshyami anasuyave jnanam vijnana sahidam yajnatva mokshase ashubhal. The first verse. And similarly, second verse also, rajavidya rajaguhyam pavitram idam uttamam pratyakshavagamam dharmyam susukham kartum avyayam. No other chapter Krishna has given introduction like this. Also you can notice that, unlike this chapter, where Krishna himself says that this is the king of all the knowledge. And that's how Krishna begins this chapter, these two verses. And then we have seen in the next third verse, so those two verses are the introduction to the chapter from Krishna's side. Krishna is saying the importance of the chapter by saying, stressing that through those two verses. Then in the third verse we have seen that in order to realize this knowledge, Krishna says there is one thing which is very, very important. What he calls it as Shraddha, isn't it? And therefore he mentions in the third verse, you can see, he says, Ashraddha dana purusha dharmasyasya parantava apraapyamam nivartande mrityu samsara vartmani, he says. One who has no Shraddha, it is not possible to realize this knowledge. And if those who haven't got that Shraddha, they have no other alternative except to come through the cycle of birth and death again. Mrityu samsara vartmani. We have seen all that in detail, isn't it? These three verses. And then the two immediate verses after that, which we have looked at, Mayadhu, very complicated verses they are, as I mentioned before, that it is, in the first reading you will think that it is all contradictory statements from Krishna, one against the other. Mayatadam idam sarvam jagadavyakta murtina matstani sarvabhudeshu najaham deshavastida. The fourth verse. And in the fifth verse, najamatstani bhudani pashyame yugamaishwaram bhudabhranajabhudasto mamatma bhudabhavana. So two things in one verse Krishna is saying, matstani sarvabhudani, and immediately in the next verse he says, najamatstani bhudani. So there the complications has come, which we have seen yesterday. We spoke about it also. We have gone through the Bhashyam a little bit yesterday, and we have seen that identification with the body is not very beautiful. Beautiful thing is when you are separated from the body. As in the case of many of the realized souls who have realized the self, if you look at them, their photographs, or if you look at their physical appearance, it may appear as though they have no beauty at all. But then why do the people get attracted to them? Because of the self, knowledge of the self, the realization of the self. That pulls people towards them. This we have seen throughout the history. You can look at anywhere, all over Bharatavarsham, if you look, you will see this. They were not very beautiful people, but they were attracted by the, because they those who, and that is one way of knowing that the person is realized or not, the self. The self-realized person, because he stays away from the body, he is beautiful. Just like we gave the example of the children, isn't it? Small children, they look beautiful. Why? Because they have not identified with the body yet. When the bodily identification starts, the impurity starts coming in one after the other. Gross body, then the mind, then the intelligence, then the ego, and everything comes on, and then you become ugly after that. After that, we become ugly. Our beauty is without all these things. That is why in all Upanishads, what do they say about it? They keep repeating this same statement again. Without body, you look beautiful. Without mind, you look beautiful. That's our original state. We are meant to be like that. These are all adhyaropam or superimposition on us, on the self. All these things like the body and other things. So that is why we mentioned yesterday also, the beauty of the jnani or the realized souls is not their beauty of the body. It's not the beauty of the body. Many mahatmas, if you look, you will see these. None of their features are very attractive. Most of them because they didn't care for their body basically. That's what it is. First thing, they didn't care for the body. And secondly, they have no identification with the body. So here we have seen. So what we are talking about yesterday, that anything that has come from the nature, like the body, mind, everything, that can be corrupted. Anything that is come from the nature, because body has come from the nature, it can be corrupted. Soul cannot be corrupted, because anything that has come from consciousness can never be corrupted. You can't change it. This changing business is anything that comes from the matter, from the material nature, it is bound to go through the changes. But that has come from the consciousness, that cannot be corrupted. You cannot corrupt it, even if you want to. But again, it is reinforcing the Krishna's statement in the second chapter. Nasade vidyade bhavo nabhavo vidyade sada ubhayorabhi drishtvandam stanayor tattvadarshibhi. Tattvadarshis knew this. Tattvadarshi means those who have realized the truth. They knew this, that self and the consciousness can never be in any way corrupted or destroyed or damaged in any way. It is not possible, even if you want to. Whereas anything that comes from the material nature will undergo changes, and in course of time it will get destroyed. So from here you can see that these children, they have in a natural way, they have that beauty. They have that beauty. Very small children, they have that beauty. And for us now, in our present state, we have to do it with consciously. We have to put effort into it now. To be consciously, we have to do it. So, what do they know? That because children, by nature, they have no identification with the body. Till we inject this identification with the body, they don't have any identification with the body. But little by little, we put the clothes on and tell them that you have to wear the clothes, and we start making fun of the children when they don't wear the clothes in front of others. So little by little it gets involved in their brain, it gets registered that, oh, I have to cover myself all the time. Shuka Brahmarshi and Jadabharata and others, they didn't cover, and Rishabhadev also. They walked out from the house, and naturally all other society started getting heavy with them. They threw stones at Rishabhadev when he walked out from the palace. without clothes. They spat at him. And same thing with who? Jadabharata also. And same thing happened to the Dattatreya Maharshi also. This is what they got from the society in return. That when they walked out from the palace, and he, the Dattatreya Maharshi, if you see in the Ekadasha Skandam, Krishna is quoting him as the authority of spiritual life, isn't it? He is bringing the Dattatreya Maharshi and says to Uddhava, Uddhava, I heard a conversation between the Dattatreya Maharshi and Yadu, who is our ancestor, because he belonged to the Yadava dynasty, and I will repeat that to you. And from 7th chapter onwards, 7, 8, 9, and all that chapters is nothing but the conversation between Yadu and the Dattatreya Maharshi. And the Dattatreya Maharshi is lying there without any clothes on in the riverbank, Kaveri's riverbank. He was lying there, and Krishna says, and the Yadu asking him, how do you get to this state? What is making you so happy even in this state of existence? He says, sometimes I don't get any food. Sometimes nobody invites me. Sometimes somebody gives me something. Sometimes I get invited to some palace for a feast. But one thing I've learned, Yadu, that in all those conditions, not allow that to get inside me. That is that state of realization inside. So you can see from all these things that spiritual life, spiritual culture is completely different from the material way we look at things. It's totally different. So just like you can see, suppose in a country, everybody is crazy. Imagine that. Everybody is crazy. And by chance, a person has gone there who is not crazy. Imagine what will happen to him. They will all take him to the doctor. Isn't it? You just imagine that. If a country is full of mad people, and a person who is not mad goes there, all the local people will think you need some treatment. You're not healthy, they'll say to him. And they'll take him to the doctor. And they'll make sure that he also becomes like them. Only then they'll feel happy about it. So only in that case he can stay in that society. Isn't it? That's so powerful, is the impact from the society. So normally, the natural state, in other words, the proper state is not to be crazy, isn't it? Not to be crazy is the normal state of existence. So, therefore, what happens is, when you talk about this Jivan Mukti, liberation, knowledge of the self, all these things to others, they are thinking that this is something very unnatural. This liberation and knowledge of the self, it's a very unnatural thing. And something we have to work very hard to get it. They think like that. And either by doing various kinds of sadhana processes, pranayamam and ashtanga yogam and all kinds of things, or engaged in very severe austerities or penances, going underneath the water or living in a cave in the Himalayas. And it is through all these we have to get it after working for it very hard. And they start thinking like that, that it is only after doing all that you can get that state. This is how people have got this impression about the Jivan Mukti state or liberated state. If you have to get to that state by doing all these things, then it is artificial. Then it is artificial. So, because anything you get it by effort, one day it will go, it will not stay. Anything you get by effort. So, that is the logic. That logic is important to know. Anything we get by effort will not stay. It will go. This is the fundamental principle in spiritual life. If it has, there is already the knowledge inside everybody. Spiritual knowledge is already there. It's not something that has to come from outside by a lot of effort. So it's already there. So if we understand this, then it becomes easier. That state, what we are looking for, freedom from all anxieties, freedom from the birth, death, old age and disease, miseries of life, that state is already there inside us. All of us have it inside us. And every great personality who has appeared in this world, great, highly realized souls, if you look at them, you can see
There is not a difference between them and us. This also we have to know. Whether it is Shankaracharya or Vivekananda or Ramana Maharshi or anyone for that matter, whoever has appeared in this world, we start thinking they are all coming from another planet or something. No. They have come here with a gross body like us and a mind, intelligence, everything like all we have. But then what was the difference? They accepted this realization first wholeheartedly without questioning it. Therefore, their life went in a different way. That's all what it has happened. We shouldn't think that all others have come with a. We start thinking, we give a divinity to everything to such an extent and start thinking that they had come, that is somebody from the higher planets, he had come and he can do all that, we can't do it. This thought comes to us and we become very negative in that way. That is not good, because if you look at them, what has happened to them? The only difference is that they made the decision, they accepted Krishna's words wholeheartedly. That's what their success was. Because they had no doubt about it. We have doubts. That's the problem. They don't have any doubts about it. Acharya Swamiji mentions this about the King's commentaries on the Bhagavad Gita. He keeps repeating this, that there is no difference whether it is any great Acharya or any great personality, Mahatmas who come here. They've all come here. Once you have come to this world, you have to accept the loss of material nature. Birth, death, old age, disease. There's no escape from that. There's no escape from that. They all had to go through this. They all had to go through that. Some of them left early, some of them left later. That's only the difference. So, what does it mean all? It means that when they come, they know that the rules are very stringent here with the material nature. Whatever material nature is forcing upon us, you have no choice. You have to accept that. But we have one freedom Krishna has given, that is the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. That we have a choice to accept it or to reject it. So, that is why in the very beginning of the second chapter, Krishna mentions, Vivasaya Alpiga Buddhi Egeha Kurunandana. Krishna says, isn't it? That Vivasaya Alpiga Buddhi, that is what they had. Shankaracharya or Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, all Acharyas, all great Mahatmas, devotees, anyone you take, what they had was this Vyavasaya Alpiya Buddhi. That Vyavasaya Alpiya Buddhi made them what they were, what they are. That's it. That Vyavasaya Alpiya Buddhi. Vyavasaya Alpiya Buddhi Egeha Kurunandana, Krishna says, isn't it? Then, what is the next? Bahushakha Anandascha. Bahushakham Anandascha. Avyavasayinam, Krishna says. Isn't it? Bahushakham Anandascha Buddhayo Avyavasayinam. Avyavasayinam, we are all that Avyavasaya group. They belong to the Vyavasaya group. That's the only difference. We are the Avyavasaya group. Buddhayo Avyavasayinam. Bahushakha Anandascha Buddhayo Avyavasayinam, Krishna saying. That Shraddha in everything else, except that soul, except the soul. So you can see that simply to say, okay, we have to respect all the previous Acharyas who had given us this understanding, but we should not try to see everyone in that as though some superstar coming from the higher planets. No, it's not like that. They never taught a spiritual life like that. They showed by example to us. Look, if we accept this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, this is what will happen. Freedom from death, immortality, freedom from this cycle of birth and death, that's what will happen. And they all realized it and showed it to us and they've gone. That's all they have done. So, here, important thing is that, so, once that, as yesterday we mentioned that, once it wakes up inside, the knowledge which is already there, if it's woken up, then everything changes in a person. And that is what happens to all the jnanis, great devotees, all of them. So, just because once you have realized the truth, it does not mean that that you have to change your clothes straight away, change your name, take the danda in the hand. All that. That is all in the society you do certain things. But self-realization has nothing to do with changing clothes or changing name or anything like that. Even initiation, nothing to do with all that. Realizing the self is totally independent of all that. That is why you can see always throughout the world, at different parts, somewhere, sometime, some people come out with spiritual realization, self-realization. All parts of the world it happens, always. This does happen. And when then people start thinking, why did this happen, how come? And those who are addicted to their material or attached to their material designations, they keep inquiring about the person's life story and who was their guru and who did the who did initiate them. All kinds of things comes out from there. But Krishna says here that once that realization comes, that then there is nothing to be done, specially anything in this world. After we have no special responsibility here anymore. After that self-realization. Because you get satisfied, you feel completely freed, independent of everything, and the peaceful existence begins. And as far as that person is concerned, there is nothing to be achieved or attained in this world. Perfection has happened. And this is the normal understanding in line with the realized souls. In line with the realized souls. They don't give any importance to what ashramam you belong to, what gender you are, what language you speak, what kind of body you have. All that has no relevance to them. Once self-realization happens, that fulfillment has come inside, shanti has come inside, and the knowledge has become. That's why from all walks of life, people get realized the self. It's not that only one particular tradition it happens, or one particular family it happens. It comes from all kinds of people. Self-realization happens too. You can see that in the life of so many great personalities. Only thing, you just have to take time to listen about them, and then you will know that it is an amazing phenomenon that how that happens, since self-realization happens. But the world doesn't see it like that. This is the problem. And we get pulled by the world. What does the world say? World says, alright, if he has realized the self, how many disciples has he got? That's the first question they will ask. And then how big is the ashram he has built? These are the world calculations. How many ashrams has he built? How big is the ashram? And how many disciples has he got? And how many people are following him? These are important for the world, isn't it? World is concerned about all these things. This is why. And then what they do is how is he dressed? What kind of dress? And the world also want to put the same dress in a similar way. People follow him like that. Oh my, this particular person is dressed like that. If he has got a turban, they also start putting turban on. You've seen this all the time, all this drama going on, isn't it? Somebody, some great Mahatma has put a turban, then the others also start thinking. He hasn't become a Mahatma, but he thinks he has to put a turban like him so that people will identify with him more than the world. So this is what's going on in this world, is it not? Is it not the same thing what's happening all the time? That people, this is a kind of show going on. It is always same. So, but self-realization has nothing to do with any of those things. Once you are moved out of the body, whether you put a turban, you don't put a turban, whether you wear this or that, what does it matter? And if you very critically study the life of these realized personalities, you will see they have moved away from the body long, long ago in their life. And after that, you can live wherever you are, in whichever state, and whatever work you are doing, you can carry on doing it. And you don't have to become a great personality to realize the self. You may become a personality after realizing the self, but you don't have to become a big personality to realize the self. Self-realization is completely a different business it is altogether. You may be cooking in the kitchen, preparing various things. You can be realized. The self can be realized. And you can continue doing that even in that realized state. That is how Krishna has taught Arjuna about self-realization. And one who is retired also, in such a person also, he can continue in the retired state but continuing with the anushtanam or the sadhana, what he is performing. But that shanti or peacefulness, tripti, satisfaction and fulfillment, that should be there. That should be there in the person. On the other hand, if you start thinking that I don't want all the shanti, I don't want any fulfillment, what I want is a lot of disciples And what I want is, I need to build a big, huge ashram so that the world gets impressed by the ashram. And then for such people, Vedantam will not be of any help. Vedantam can't help them in that case. So in order to do all that, you need some special siddhi, and you have to do particular sadhana for all kinds of things like that. And also, if your prarabdham is like that, you have to do all those things anyway. Otherwise, then you have to also know that spiritual world is also very competitive. You know that. That it's not so straightforward there. Gurus competing each other. One guru worried that another guru is stealing his disciples away from him. Then they are having mutually arguing and fighting about it. One guru says to another guru, you are doing the wrong thing. This guru says, it's none of your business. It's my business. I am doing what you do. You do what you can. And then all this is nothing to do with spiritual life. This is all our that material garbage you have brought with us. We are bringing it to the spiritual field as well. There's nothing more than that. So this is another side to it. So jnanam, knowledge, this matsaryam, that competition each other, this is all Maya's vilasam. Maya's vilasam it is. Maya is doing all these things with everybody. Jnanam, knowledge, what Krishna is talking about, is a very simple thing. What does it show to us? It shows to us that wherever you are, in whichever position you are, to be situated in that and to realize the truth. That is spiritual life. Whichever position Krishna has put us in, doesn't matter, grihastha, brahmachari, sannyasi, whatever it may be, to be situated in that state and able to realize the truth, that is spiritual life. You don't require any other things for all these things to do. In other words, to know that we are free right here within this body. And when you hear itself, that is a very comforting thing it is. That is what a spiritual life is all about. Because quite often, when all these things are happening, people get disturbed over it. They start thinking that, oh, I couldn't do these things, I couldn't do that. But what has it got to do with spiritual life? Self-realization is totally independent of all these things. There were many Mahatmas who never did any of these things, completely unknown to this world. And they executed their spiritual life so well that many people went to them. Like we mentioned that before, Vivekananda was very fond of Pavhari Baba. And to see Pavhari Baba was very difficult, so aloof from this world. He lived in a cave near Ayodhya, not far from there. In a cave he lived, and people went to see him, but he wanted to stay away from the society. So, but many instances, it's not that everyone in the spiritual life was wandering, running around all over the world and having a lot of followers. And sometimes Krishna put some people in that situation. That's their prarabdham. That's all it is. That's their prarabdham it is. And some other cases that Krishna, you can also see the both are Krishna's different representatives. Some people, they don't want anything, they have complete their realization and knowledge, and they've realized themselves the truth and they've left this world. And some others had to go through all this drama before they leave this world. So, here, that realizing that there is a perfection inside, when you realize that, it is like conquering the Everest. That it is such a great realization at that time. And and we have to know this first. There's nothing to be achieved in this world. Nothing to be achieved in this world. Actually, the whole problem is coming from the mind. Mind is creating all the trouble. The moment the mind has come under control and mind has stopped putting that cover, avaranam, in front of the soul, at that time, immediately, you will experience that perfection inside. And then you'll know that purnatvam, purnada, or perfection is right there inside every one of us. It's not to come from outside. Krishna is saying here, Bhuda Brannaja Bhudasto Mamalma Bhuda Bhavana. If you look into that verse, fifth verse, Krishna is saying here, Bhuda Brannaja Bhudasto Mamalma Bhuda Bhavana. So, all living entities in this world, all living entities in this world, is in Swarupam. Swarupa means our Swarupa means spiritual, the self, the soul, isn't it? The experience of all the different bodies is in that self. Self is the background, like we talked about the screen yesterday. In the screen, you see all these things, these different bodies, different living entities, different species, and millions and billions of living entities. All this is behind that, is that screen, the self. And that self is one. In that, all this multi number of living entities is experienced. That is all. So, in Swarupam, that is Swarupam, isn't it? The self is the Swarupam. In that Swarupam is Panchabhudatmaka means the five material elements. Five material elements is called Panchabhudam. So these five material elements is Prapancham. Prapancham means this creation. Includes our body, mind, intelligence, ego, everything. This all belongs to that five material elements. Or you can say the Aparaprakriti. Aparaprakriti is not real. Is not real. And in reality, this Aparaprakriti is not there in the Paraprakriti. This is the point in this verse. Aparaprakriti does not exist in the Paraprakriti. And both these verses, which is 4 and 5, till you have realized, you won't know, understand it. As I said that before also. The verse 4 and 5, till you realize the self, you won't know it, what Krishna is saying there. It is such an amazing statement that is. And you may wonder why Krishna is saying like this and confusing all of us. Why can't he be straightforward about it? You may ask that question, isn't it? Krishna, one hand, Krishna is saying, I am present everywhere. Isn't it? He mentions that, I am present everywhere. And then he says, the whole world, creation is in me. Then he says, I am not in this creation. And then he says, this world is not in me. All these things are statements in these two verses. Completely one against the other. There are few statements in these two verses. And Krishna says to Arjuna, see my Aishwaryam or Ishwara Shakti or the power of my manifestation. See that, Krishna says. Pashyame Yogam Aishwaryam. We have mentioned that yesterday, that Yogam refers to Maya. Maya. Maya is also Krishna's energy. It is Krishna's energy. So Krishna is saying, look at the power of that energy. Maya's energy, isn't it? All living entities are in me, but I don't have any living entities in me. All living entities are in me. Dharana. That's what he uses there. That Matsani Sarvabhudhani, he says. Matsani Sarvabhudhani means all living entities are in me. Then he says, Nacha Matsani Bhudhani, they are not in me. Nacha Matsani Bhudhani, he says. And Bhudhastaha, I am not Nacha Bhudhastaha, Nacha Matsani Bhudhani. I am not there in any living entity, he says there. Mamalma Bhuta Bhavanaha. In other words, my actual nature is all these living entities, what you experience in this, all you see in this creation, they have been created out of my bhavana, my imagination. They have come. And I comes out from me and I destroy them when I want. I create them and I destroy them when I want. But I am the very primeval cause of all this, very primary cause of all these things. And I'm not affected by anything at that time. I'm not affected by anything. But give you an example how to understand this. In the dream state, if you look, you see many things in the dream, isn't it? Some people don't have any dreams. They get good deep sleep. They are very fortunate. But most, I don't know, we all get a lot of dreams, isn't it, in the night, whether we like it or not, isn't it? And if you wake up in the morning, in the wakened state, Everything has gone, isn't it? Everything has gone. So, where did all this dream happen? Where did the dream happen? It happened in me. Is it not? It was in me the dream was happening. We say, I had a dream. We say, I had a dream. But actually, the dream was happening in me. The dream was happening in me. But if you ask the question, was it real? Did that happen actually? No, that is a proof. It didn't happen. It's the same thing. That this dream, we are rejecting that in the name as a dream. But we find it difficult to reject the world in the same way. So why is it like that? In the night when the dream happens, we have no problem. As soon as you wake up in the morning, most of the dream has gone away. Most of the dream has gone away. And you know very well that, oh, it was just a dream. You don't try to remember. Has anybody got a record of all the dreams they had throughout life? We don't have. You see, we don't even know what we dreamt last night. So many dreams have come and gone. But as soon as you come back to awakened state, and all that has happened in me. I was the background behind it, the screen. It was happening in me. But in the morning, it's all gone. Similarly, in the awakened state, we find a completely different. Awakened state, as soon as the mind and senses comes, we think, oh, it's all real. Everything is real then. When the mind comes and the senses comes, false ego comes, it's real. Krishna is saying that that is what these verses are talking about. That is the proof. That is the meaning of this verse. I've seen so many things in the dream state. Where did I see all of that? I've seen it in me, everything. I've seen that in me. And where did it all happen? It all happened in me. It happened in me. And has it happened really? No. It hasn't happened really. It was a dream, isn't it? So, just like in the dream, it rained heavily. In the dream, it rained heavily. Did I get wet? No. So, so similarly, in the same way Krishna says, in your Swarupam, nothing is happening. Swarupam is what Krishna is talking about here. That's what Krishna is saying here. Najamatsani bhudani pashyame. This is the beauty of this Maya. Maya's way. I get, and in the dream state, I had a big meal. I had a big meal and I felt very hungry. But when I woke up, I felt more hungry. Is it not? In the dream, you had hunger and you had a big feast. But when you woke up, you should not be hungry actually. But you feel very hungry. You feel very hungry because it was a meal like that. That kind of meal you had. For which you didn't pay, naturally. So similarly, everything in this world, Krishna is saying, if you do not see like this, we are taking everything so serious here, that all this is real, or this is real, that's a dream. Who says this is not a dream? Prabhupada mentions this in few places. That was a night dream, this is a day dream, he says. In few purports, he mentions that. So these things won't happen till self-inquiry begins. When you don't inquire about the self, you won't become aware of these things properly. You may speak about it and leave it behind, but that is only a thought. Just like we recite these words, Dehinosmin yadha dehe kaumaram yavanam jara tatha dehandara praptar dhiras tatranam ukyadi. I'm not this body. I make a statement. Now what is that statement? It is another thought wave in me. It's like so many other thoughts has come and gone. This is another thought wave has come and gone. That is not good enough. It cannot remain as a thought wave. It has to come to the platform of realization. Other anubhavam. Anubhavam it has to be, or what they call as the anubhuti. Aparoksha anubhuti. Only when it becomes anubhuti, that statement makes any sense. Similarly, here also, Krishna's point is that that if you are hungry and you are sleeping, and if you had a feast, but if you woke up in the morning, when you woke up from the sleep, the hunger won't go. It is still there, isn't it? So, what is important here is, anything that has happened in the dream state, Nothing has affected your vacant state. Have you noticed that? These three states are totally independent. That is the way Maya works with us. You cannot transfer from one state to another state, carry something from one state to another state on your own. You can't do that. If Maya does that, you will get it. Otherwise not. That means, whatever that has happened in the, this is the example for that. That you had hunger, you had hunger and you went to sleep. And in the sleep, you had a big feast. But when you woke up, you still have the hunger. What does that show? It shows that whatever that has happened in the dream state has no bearing on your vacant state. Two states are totally independent. Similarly, whatever you have in the dream will not touch your vacant state. Similarly, in the vacant state, when you realize the self, you will know that this what is experiencing is also a dream. In our ajnanam, that is why what we say, ajnanam state, this is our present state, isn't it? Whether we admit it or not, that's another thing. That's why the prayer is, ajnanatmirandhasya jnananjana shalagaya chakshurunmilidam yena tasmai shri gurave nama. Why do we sing this? We have to look at the meaning also. Ajnanam is inside, that is what it is. This is ajnanam. Ajnanam is this, that to take this world as real. That itself is the ajnanam. This is not real. And the example from the Vedantam is this, that in Swapnam what you have, they do not consider Jagrat state any more important than the Swapnam or deep sleep. Vacant state is any more important than the dream state or the deep sleep. And if we don't accept it, simply working like an asshole vacant state and thinking that self-realization is going to happen one day, it's not going to happen. That's not possible. Because they have, the rishis, they have gone very deeply into this subject of vacant state, dream state and the deep sleep. And they have studied them so much in detail, compared it very well, one state to another. And they have come to the conclusion, and that is what Krishna is talking about in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. The rishi's conclusions, as Krishna says, they have concluded it like that, that nothing what happens in the dream state has any impact on the vacant state. And in the vacant state also, Krishna says here that they doesn't touch. Similarly, Jagrat state also, in the vacant state, if you have realized the self, then you will know that this existence in the vacant state is also a dream, like the dream what you experience in the night. Most of the time, the problem what we have is, it is very deeply, so many years we have lived in this way, thinking that this vacant state is the only reality. That's injected into us, isn't it, strongly. And all achievements, attainments, gold medals, everything is in the vacant state. Once you go into deep sleep, there is no gold medal there. Is there? There is no gold medal there. Everyone has the same medal once you go into the deep sleep. So why Vedantam is talking about all these things? To make us aware that how ignorant we are in our, that is called ajnanam. This ajnanam has to go from inside. That is why ajnana timirandhasya. Due to that ajnanam, timiram has come. We can't see things more, any more clearer. Andhasya, and we are blind, the verse is saying. And therefore, we have to operate that ajnanam. Jnana anjana shalagaya. Shalaka and jaluka is the operating instruments for the doctors in the Ayurvedam. So, jnana anjana shalagaya, through that power of knowledge, you have to operate the eye. We are seeing things in the wrong way. What we are seeing is not the reality. Remember, we mentioned that before. What you know is not the truth. And truth cannot be known. Remember? What you know is not the truth. And truth cannot be known. Truth can only be experienced. It cannot be known. Knowing means mind and intelligence. Isn't it? Mind and intelligence. So, So, Dirga Swapna, Vasishtha says, Dirga Swapna Mimam Vidhi, Dirgham Va Chitta Vibhramam. He says to Ramchandra, Yoga Vasishtham, Dirga Swapna Mimam Vidhi, Dirgham Va Chitta Vibhramam. He says, if once you know that Dirga Swapnam, Dirga Swapna means a long dream, this is. What we are experiencing now is a long dream. And this awareness, somehow or the other, you will know one day that none of your activities in this world, vyavaharam in this world, has any impact on the self inside. On the self inside. And Krishna has clarified that in these two verses in principle. That's what he wanted to say to us. That the separation between the self and the, in other words, awareness and the non-self. Non-self is going on, and what is happening in the non-self, which is not the, which is the body, mind, intelligence, all our transactions in this world, none of them has any impact on the self inside. Krishna is saying that. That's the important understanding. Spiritual life is centered around all this understanding. It's not just staying out of Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise, what's the point in studying Bhagavad Gita? Bhagavad Gita is making us aware the nature of the soul. The nature of the soul. Soul can never be disturbed by anything. Okay, in the second chapter, Krishna spoke about it. It cannot be cut into pieces. It cannot be moist. It cannot be dried. And so many things. But in this chapter, Krishna is saying, even all your activities in this world, pious activity, sinful activity, or any kind of activity, karmam, akarmam, vikarmam, all, none of those things will have any impact on the soul inside. Soul is totally independent of all this. Just like Krishna says this example here, that all living entities are there, but they are not in me. They are not in me. And one place is, so to understand this, Krishna is saying here, you can see it's going to come out with some examples now from the next verse onwards. Let's look at that. Verse 6.
Yatha kashastito nityam vayu sarvatra gomahan tatha sarvani bhutani matstanidi ubhadharaya yathakashastito nityam vayu sarvatra gomahan tatha sarvani bhutani matstanidi ubhadharaya.
These are all examples now for what he has spoken in the verse 4 and 5 to make it a little bit more clarity from that.
Yatha akashastito nityam vayu sarvatra go mahan tatha sarvani bhutani matstani iti ubhadharaya.
Krishna is saying that as the mighty wind blowing everywhere always rests in ethereal space, know that in the same manner all beings rest in me. All beings rest in me. Now you can see that if we are not discussing this on the platform of the soul, these verses won't make any sense, isn't it? Only on a spiritual plane, all this can be explained. Totally accepting that soul who is all-pervading, present in everyone, all times, who is never destroyed, who is untouched by anything, that means Nitya Shuddha Buddha Mukta Swarupam. That's the very nature of that soul. It is in that soul as the background all these verses are spoken. These verses are spoken. Because Krishna is speaking purely from the platform of the soul, only then this message of Bhagavad Gita will go through. Yatha akashastito nityam vayu sarvatra go mahan tatha sarvani bhudhani matsani iti upadharaya. Krishna is saying, this vayu means air, sarvatra gachadi, isn't it? Sarvatra gachadi. In other words, Krishna says, vayu go into all the space. It can go anywhere. All through the space it goes. And it travels everywhere. Where does it travel? Vayu can travel, isn't it? You can move from one place to another. If you look into the five material elements, you can see the difference between one element to the other, which we have spoken before also. That earth, nature, if you leave it somewhere, it will stay there.
nature of the earth. And then if you become a little finer, water is finer, isn't it? If you pour water anywhere, it spreads. Horizontally, it spreads. And then finer than the water is the fire. And what's the nature of the fire? Fire can spread both horizontally and vertically. And finer than the fire is the air. Air can travel anywhere at its own will. It can move from one place to another. Our weather people will say there was a depression and suppression and all kinds of things, they say. But Vayu can move on its own. That potency is there in the air. Air can move freely when it wants to. So, but we will we measure it like this through depression and other things by the barometric pressure. They will identify like that. But in the first instance, if you ask the question, who decided that this pressure should change? That they don't have an answer for that. So what they are seeing is they are seeing the symptoms and telling us that because this has happened, therefore the chances of the change of weather, whatever, it's going to bring it to us. But who makes the decision that Vayu Sarvatra Go Mahan, Krishna is saying there. Vayu, air has got the whole freedom to move whichever way he wants to go. He makes that decision. There is no law there to restrict him there. It is his sweet will. He goes there. So, similarly, Krishna, in the space, so this air moves in the space, isn't it? Which is finer than the air. Space is the most finest of all the five material elements. So, this movement of the air is within that space. So, that space also is a seat for that, including that space, because you can see there that other four material elements, which means air, fire, water, and earth, these four material elements, who gives the space? The sky. The space is a real space, isn't it? It gives the space for all the four material elements to stay within that. In other words, sky is the background, or space is the background for the other four material elements. Krishna is saying here, soul holds on to the space also, is kept space also is kept by the soul. Just like, example is like this, just like the space or the sky holds all the material elements, air, fire, water, ether, and gives space for them to operate. Space gives that, sky gives that, isn't it? Krishna says, Atma or the soul accommodates all the five material elements in its hands. It keeps it within its control. Even for the space to function, for the space to exist, Atma is necessary. Atma is the behind the five material elements. And Atma allows all of them to move. Allows all the material elements to move within that. It allows to move. And when, just like why that example given is, sky, when these things happen, for example, earth, water, fire, and air, when all these four material elements are moving inside, it makes movement all the time. Sky is not affected, isn't it? Space is not affected by that. It may, for us, from our appearance, it looks to us that something has happened, some disaster happened, or tide has happened, or fire has happened, only for a short time, but space is not affected. Again, the space comes back as it is. Space remains pure, unaffected by any of those things. Similarly, Krishna is saying, similarly, including the space and all material elements, even though they are all present, the soul is not affected. See that logic between the space and soul. Just like the space accommodates all the material elements and allow them to move freely within the space, similarly, soul allows, including the space and all the material elements, to move within the soul, within the soul. That is how to understand this soul. It's the most difficult thing, isn't it? To explain that. That's why Krishna is giving these examples. Yatha akashasthito nityam vayu sarvatra gomahan tatha sarvani bhutani matsthani iti upatareya. That's what that verse means. Otherwise, if you read it, you won't make any sense out of it. You'll start thinking, oh, mighty wind blowing everywhere, always rest in Israel's space. Know that in the same manner all beings rest in me. But to explain that, you have to put it in this way, that the four material elements, that means air, fire, water, earth, these four are accommodated by the space, the fifth one, come. Space accommodates all these four. Gives them freedom to move within that space, isn't it? Soul, what it does is, Alma, Krishna is saying, that's why, Matsthani Upadharaya, Matsthani Upadharaya. In me, Krishna, which means the soul, all material elements, including earth, water, air, ether, and fire, they all move. I have given the freedom for that to move within that. Within that. Matsthani Upadharaya. They are in me. That's why I'm saying, just like Vayu Sarvatra Gomahan, like the air goes everywhere. Sarvatra, wherever it wants, it can go. But within the space, only it can go. But including that space, Krishna says, space and all the other four material elements, they all are in me. They are all in me. In me means in the soul. Krishna is identifying as the soul of everyone. Spiritual potency that is. That's what Krishna mentioned in the last verse, that Yoga Maishwaram. See that, Arjuna, my yoga power. It is like that, he says there. Isn't it? So, here, in other words, similarly, all these living entities in this world also, it is an experience in the soul. It's an experience in the soul. For example, soul is present in everywhere. And we are living entities moving around within that soul. That one potency soul. Normally, what do we say? Oh, there is soul in me, there is soul in you, there is soul in somebody, like that. That is a general statement, but reality is soul is present everywhere and we have been given freedom once we have accepted a particular material body. Material body has got the freedom to move around. That's all it is. Got to move around. But behind this, the power behind that is that soul, Atma, behind that. So, similarly, all living entities, Krishna says in the creation, is nothing but they are all moving in the background of the soul, not to take importance of the soul. So, now, from the next three verses, Krishna is going to expand on this understanding. Why Krishna is saying all these things? That question we have to ask, isn't it? Why Krishna is saying all these things? The reason is, main reason for that is, our attention is always in the world, going in the world. Drishti. Our drishti is always in the world. What's going on there? This is what we are always thinking about it, isn't it? And why? Because we are thinking there is something to be achieved, attained in this world, and always thinking about that. I have to do this, I have to do that, I have so many things to do. And this has gone so deeply inside. Because of that, what happened? Because of that, what happened was that we have gone to the world, to the external world, too far. We have gone to the world. And it has become so difficult to come the return journey. It is still the journey is going outward further. It's not returning, coming back. It's the most difficult thing to turn the attention from the world towards the soul. Towards the soul. So, therefore, till we know that there is nothing to be achieved, nothing to be attained in this world, our attention, drishti, will not go towards the soul. It will not go towards the soul. This example is there in all the Upanishads also. You know that we have spoken about it so many times in Kathopanishad also, that famous verse that Krishna has created us like this and given all these windows to the world, the senses. And they allowed us to open the windows. And as soon as the windows were open, what is the next thing? Mind goes out through the windows outside to the world. And then Krishna is saying, I have come and sat inside me, and tells us, turn your attention towards me. First of all, he gave us all the facilities for going out. Only when the opportunity is there, you will go out, isn't it? Otherwise, you won't go out. There are many people in this world who never have left their village, isn't it? They lived in the village, they were born in a particular place, they died in the same house, same village, they never left. So, that's their prarabdham, but there's somebody else then all the time running around with the round the world ticket. That's also there. So, both extremes are there. So, when you compare the both, Krishna's point is this, that some people have bought too many round the world ticket and gone. It's very difficult to get them back. I can't sit 5 minutes in one place. It's become so difficult for them. Krishna's grace that we are only able to travel at the moment within this planet. Suppose Krishna has allowed us to go to other planets also freely. What would have happened? We'll have to go open in centers there also, isn't it? So, this, where is the end to this? This is the mind. It is like that. It won't allow you to take the attention. Whereas Krishna is saying to us, Paranjikani, that famous verse in the Kathopanishad. That's what it is saying. That he has created us like this and put us in this awkward situation and telling us, take your attention inwards, take your attention inwards. It's not possible because it got used to it so much outside. It got tasted this world too far. So therefore, it will not go inside easily. It's not very easy to take it inside. And antarmukhatvam. Antarmukhatvam means that inward looking nature. So, and in Tiruvachakam, there is interesting statements about this, how we have put us into this awkward situation, it says like that. There. So, any pratibhasam, in other words, without getting affected by any of those things, what's going on in the creation, in the world, and to get back into our swarupam is a most difficult thing. It's a very difficult thing to go inwards like this. And going back into that, and then you are seeing the amazing experience inside. What is going on inside every one of us? What a big world opens up there. And when we see that all what can happen there, and the realization there, Surubam, when you start, attention falls there, Andharmukhatvam, or when it goes inwards, and you go deeper and deeper, at that stage, all the chittavrittis also stops. The mind comes to a dead stop. No more chittavritti after that. Because why Krishna is saying this is, chittavritti creates division. It creates a division in us. And when you don't, why we are not able to go back? Because of chittavritti. Listen, why is the chittavritti created? Because of the world. Our shraddha went to the world and the world created the chittavritti. Chittavritti creates this division between the self and the non-self. And unable to go back to the self and to inquire about the truth, we find it a big struggle, isn't it? Big struggle. Inquiry of the self is the greatest difficulty. That is why most people find difficulty with Vedantam. When you say to them these things, they are saying, we'll look at the next life, we'll try. In this life, it's not possible. They say like that. We look at it in the next life. Let this life go as it is now, where we are. We'll think about it in the next life. It is not possible in this life. That's the easiest thing to say. Why? Because they themselves find it very difficult to turn the attention inwards. It is not so easy as we say about that. So, what the problem is that this chittavritti creates division. It creates division. That is why you know that chittavritti is discussed everywhere in the Bhagavadam also. There, Sri Narada Maharshi says to Yudhishthira Maharaj about chittavritti, isn't it? He says, even though chittavrittis are happening, it's like a disturbance inside. Between that chittavritti from one to another, there is me, Krishna says. Oh, sorry, Narada Maharshi says there, isn't it? Remember in the Saptama Skandam, in the 7th canto, Sri Narada Maharshi says to Yudhishthira, between two thought waves, I come out. Krishna comes out between the two thought waves. If you say this to somebody, they just say, this all make, doesn't make any sense to us. What's all this? People ask the question. We don't even know. We are so much gone out that we don't even know that there is a gap between the two Chitavrati. We are not even aware of that. One thought wave comes and goes, before that the next one comes in. Isn't it? And that is a whole process throughout the waking state. And with great difficulty, we go back to the dream state and then finally to deep sleep. As soon as we wake up in the morning, the same process begins again. So, in order that to escape from that, Krishna is saying here, that state, that between two vritti, between two chitta-vritti, there is a state there, and if you keep on giving attention to that, Krishna says, this magic, this is a magic, Indrajalam, they call it. Or the, which one? This chitta-vritti is a magic. It is continuously cheating us. This chitta-vritti is continuously cheating us. And we still find it difficult not to give importance to chitta-vritti. Isn't it? We think that Chitta-vritti should be there all the time. We say that he is a very thoughtful person. He is thinking about all kinds of rubbish and he says he is a very thoughtful person. That's what we say about the person, isn't it? So, thoughtful person is not always very good. Thoughtful, if you are thinking about all kinds of rubbish and you say he is a thoughtful person, then what use is there? That's not a good thing. A person who can arrest all the thoughts and complete freedom from the thought and perfectly situated in the shanti, that peaceful state, he is the one who is progressing on the spiritual path. He is progressing on the spiritual path. So, in order to give us a hint, Krishna says, between two chitta-vritti, I am present. I am present there. Narada Maharshi says that to Yudhishthira. Just like in the 10th chapter also, Krishna spoke about this, that aham-vritti, that awareness what is, that is another indication Krishna is giving into us. Aham vritti is spuranam all the time. Aham aham, that awareness is always there. It is in the background of that awareness, these chitta vrittis are coming. So when chitta vrittis are coming in the background of this awareness, when one chitta vritti goes and the next chitta vritti comes, the awareness comes out in between the two. And that is what we are, Narada Maharshi is talking about that in the chitta-vritti is not our healthy state. Awareness is our healthy state. In that healthy state, this disease called chitta-vritti keeps coming one after the other. And but between two chitta-vritti, this awareness comes out. That's spuranam. It's called spuranam. That's the word they use. Spuranam means it just shines for a second. And depending, if you are too much in the chitta-vritti stage, too much chitta-vritti going on, then you won't be able to notice that. That is why the sages have told that you should withdraw and minimize the chitta-vritti to the best possible, so that you may be able to sense this presence of the awareness in between the two. In between the two. And Krishna says, that's me. That's me. So, our spiritual life is now, we are inquiring about Krishna in some form, somewhere, when we are going to meet him. This is what we are thinking about, isn't it? And in our mind, we have set up certain understanding and looking for him somewhere. But what it is that Krishna is saying that I am there at the same place where the mind was born, where the mind takes birth. And because where the mind takes birth, where Krishna mentions that in the Agarcha Skandam also, wherever the mind is taking that birth, it is the same source where I am present. Because from me, the mind was born. Chit-shakti, isn't it? From Chit-shakti, the mind was born. So, that is how the sages realized, the rishis have come to the conclusion, that the source where the mind is taking birth, where the mind is taking birth, is the same place where jiva also takes birth. Ahangaram also takes birth, at the same place where it takes birth. If you look into the body, therefore they have identified the location somewhere here. And they are saying there, that's where the mind is taking birth, and that's the same place where the ahangaram also is taking birth. And there is present in that location, there is a perfection. The same location, because that is where you can identify, there is a perfection there, there is a fulfillment there on the same spot, on the same spot. And that perfection or fulfillment is only possible to realize it only through the self-inquiry. Otherwise, it is not possible. Otherwise, it is not possible. Out of the two things, I and me, two things we have, isn't it? I and me. The I is the self-inquiry and me is the surrender. I is the self-inquiry and me is the surrender. Inquiry is who am I? That inquiry goes on one hand, self-inquiry. And on the other side, me, the continuous surrender to Krishna, that constantly surrendering process. Those two things. So when the mind goes back to the place where it has taken birth, to the same place, similarly, all the chittavritti also has to go back to the same place where it's coming from, where it is coming from. Because where is it born? All the chittavrittis are born at the place where the heart is. That hrit, 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 Krishna is talking about hrit, isn't it? You know, in so many places in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna uses the word hrit. Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto mattasmradir jnanam apohanam cham. Vedaischa sarver ahameva vedyo vedandakrit vedavideva chaham. The hridi, hridi sannivishto, that hrit, that's that place, that hrit, isn't it? In other places also, you will see in the Bhagavadam also, this hrit is mentioned. So, it is not our mechanical heart Krishna is talking about. Krishna is not a person who is into anatomy so much. Anatomy is our creation, it's not Krishna's creation. So, Krishna says, that place where mind was born, mind has taken birth, that is hrit. The place where knowledge, forgetfulness, memory, all that comes from there. That's the source, everything. That's the source, everything. So, because the source is there, knowledge, forgetfulness and memory is everything coming from there. Normally we start, when you read that verse, what do we say? Oh, all the knowledge is here, we say. And then we start looking at, they start operating the brain and checking where is all the knowledge cells. This is the scientific approach. The spiritual approach is that when he is present here, you will see the effect here in the brain. When he is present here, you will see effect in various ways. Memory, forgetfulness, knowledge, all the things present in the person. When he is present here. When he goes away, knowledge goes, forgetfulness goes, memory goes, everything goes. But doctors and the scientists, they identify everything in separate locations in the body. Is it not? But that is not the right way. Because Krishna is saying to us, knowledge, forgetfulness, memory, everything is coming from hrit. Hriti sannivishto. Because I am there, matta, smridir, jnanam, abohanam cha, everything is also there. They're also there. But source is there, not here, not anywhere else in the body. That's the important thing. So here, because it is like that, Krishna says here that that location where it goes back to, that is our swarupam, our identity, it is there. And that, Krishna says, is we address it as Satya Chitta Anandam, and that's there. Or Nitya Shuddha Buddha Mukta Swarupam. So, so that truth, when and touching there, ultimately through Shraddha. That's where Shraddha comes in. Shraddha comes in there. And Shraddha, through Shraddha, when you touch that spot where he is present, that's called Samadhi. That's called Samadhi. So through Shraddha, when you touch that space, and it will be just like Krishna is saying that, you know, this Chintamani, this stone, touchstone, with which, I say, if you touch something, it turns into gold. In the same way, Krishna says, with Shraddha, when you touch that spot, the whole thing changes, completely changes. With Shraddha, when you touch that spot, where, Hridi, when you touch there, immediately the whole thing changes in us. Everything changes in us. So, at that time, we become perfect. We become perfect. And the fear of death will go. Shanti or perfection will come. And that is what Krishna said in the second verse. In the first verse, moksha se ashubhad. If you remember, that idam tume guhyatamam pravakshyami anasuyave jnanam vijnana sahidam yel jnatva moksha se ashubhad. He mentioned that in the first verse. and that is that. When through grown powerful Shraddha, what is grown in a person, as we mentioned before, what is Shraddha means? Shraddha means, again coming back to the same thing, what is that? That Krishna says, Shraddha is nothing, it's a powerful force. When the mind gets fully purified, that same energy, the mind, which has come from the Chit Shakti, that mind, which is full of Chittavrittis at the moment, when that mind gets purified, it develops what is known, it turns into what is called Shraddha. Mind turns, becomes Shraddha. And when that Shraddha becomes very intense, it turns into Bhakti. It turns into Bhakti. And when that Bhakti stage comes, which is full of Bhakti inside, at that time, what Krishna says here is that you will go and touch that spot where all this is taking birth inside. Sayesha jivo vivara prasuti. If you remember that verse, very important verse that is in the 11th canto, in the 12th chapter thing. Uddhava asked the question, didn't answer the question, started talking about the birth of jiva, where jiva is coming from. Birth of jiva means birth of false ego. That's birth of jiva. So birth of jiva is nothing but birth of false ego. False ego is that jiva, where he is born. And that's the same source where mind is born. Mind is born. And because it's taking birth from there, the rishis are telling us that's the same place where he is present. Because they are taking birth from there. Therefore, they are saying that the source of all Chit Shakti, which is present, Krishna is present inside at that particular locations inside the body. So the result will be, after that it has touched that source, continuous happiness or bliss and fulfillment and satisfaction. And it becomes our own. It becomes our own. Now, to do that, what sadhana is required, that is what Krishna is going to say now. What sadhana is required, main sadhana. So, first thing what Krishna has done is, saying like this, first thing he spoke about Maya, isn't it? Prakriti, material nature, or Maya. Maya is the one which makes us feel that this world is real. That's Maya's job. Maya is expert at that, isn't it? To make us feel that this world is totally real. Who is able to do that? Maya is able to do that. No matter how much you hear Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and although all the Acharyas and Krishna himself has spoken to us all these things, she is still powerful. As soon as you leave, she takes control. Even when you may hear all these things, you say, oh, you can say all that things. I have to pay my bills, isn't it? That will be our excuse for that. We will not be able to accept Krishna's words. That's why that vyavasayalmiya buddhi is a most necessary thing, to be so fixed on that. Krishna's words has to be accepted totally. Otherwise, there is no hope. So, therefore, Krishna first spoke about Maya to tell us, Maya makes you feel all this is real, and then explain that phenomenon in the last two verses, how it happens, isn't it? You saw that in the last two verses. When he, Maya tadamidam sarvam jagad avyakta murtinam matsthani sarvabhudani najaham teshu avastida. Then, najamatsthani bhudani, totally opposing things, said, this opposing business and to convince you it's all happening is Maya's job. Akhadita ghatana patiyasi Maya. Things what you think is not possible, Maya will make you realize it is possible. That's Maya's strength. Two opposing things he has spoken. Krishna has spoken in verse 4 and 5. And then says to us that this is happening because of the Maya's power, which is one of my energies, Krishna puts it like that. Which is one of my, Krishna's energy it is. So, that energy of Maya, called Maya, is able to do this with us. So, Krishna has spoken about that Maya till now. Explain that phenomenon, how it happens in those two verses. After that, and Krishna is going to talk about the sadhana, what is required for that in the next verses, in the next few verses. But when we look at it now this way, that after we have now so far we have seen six verses in this chapter, isn't it? With this, the six verses we have seen. So, first two verses Krishna has used to talk about Brahma Vidya, to talk about the Brahma Vidya, or the knowledge of the soul and the glorification of that, the glory of Brahma Vidya, the greatness. That's what he has spoken in the first two verses and glorified Brahma Vidya. And in the third verse, Krishna also mentioned the main obstacle of realizing this Brahma Vidya. What that is, he has spoken in the third verse, isn't it? He mentioned that Shraddha, he said. Ashraddha dhana purusha dharmasyasya parandava. Third verse, isn't it? Dharmasyasya parandava. Aprapyamam nivartande mrityo samsaravartmani. So, in the third verse, he spoke about that Shraddha is the main thing. And Krishna mentions earlier also, Shraddhavan labhade jnanam. There is a statement earlier. Shraddhavan labhade jnanam. So, here Krishna has spoken in a very negative way. Earlier, Krishna has spoken in a positive way. Shraddhavan labhade jnanam. Here, Krishna is saying, Ashraddha dhana purusha dharmasyasya parandava. In a little bit negative way, Krishna has spoken there. Because once you don't have Shraddha, it means Krishna says, come back and accept, go through this cycle of birth and death again and again. There is no choice, he says. Ashraddha dhana purusha dharmasyasya parandava. Aprapimam nivartande mrityu samsara vartmani. There is no choice, he said there. Isn't it? So the only reason is, Krishna says, important thing is Shraddha. Shraddha is the main thing. So, the thing what creates a Shraddha in a person, the primary reason for that is, wherever our goal is, that's where our Shraddha will be. That we know that, isn't it? Wherever, whatever goal you have decided inside us, each one of us has some goal inside us. That may be different from person to person. The goal will be different from person to person. So wherever you are, you have decided what you want to be, what you want in life, that will be the place where your Shraddha will be. Where your Shraddha will be. So wherever your goal you are fixed, that's where your Shraddha will be. We may be doing so many other things in this world, but what we have made important in our life as the goal, that's where our Shraddha will be always. Our Shraddha will be there always. Because in a natural way, Shraddha is also another power of that mind which comes, attention, and that will naturally go there, where we have fixed that goal as our goal in life, isn't it? So, for example, you can see majority of the people in this world, majority you can say, that they have decided making money in the life is the most important thing. They have decided that. Somehow or the other, they have decided that. You can't ask why. They have decided that we have to make a lot of money in this life. That they have decided. Now, when they have made that decision, if somebody has a decision like that in life, after that, you go to meditation, or you study Bhagavad Gita, or you practice any yoga system, jnanam, karmam, bhakti, whatever it is. You can do it throughout your life, there will be no benefit. Nothing will happen. This is the most difficult thing in spiritual life. 99% people, they have come to spiritual life keeping the goal somewhere else. It may not be, it depends on what stage of life one is, isn't it? When you are young, particularly that's the goal, making a lot of money in this world. Somebody, it may be become American president or British prime minister or something like that. But there will be some goal in everyone's head. And that's where all his Shraddha is.
And when it is like that, no matter what you do here, you can chant 200 rounds every day for 40, 50 years, you will not go back, you will stay here. This is why it is so important to get the goal fixed properly. And it is not easy to take attention away from where you are already fixed the goal. Where you already fixed the goal. And I have to say this, it's all our life is like that. All of us, we are in that state. That's why this spiritual life becomes a lot of struggle. Because of that, because our attention, Shraddha, is not exactly on the place where it should be. As Krishna is saying like this. So that is why that verse, Ashraddha Dana Purusha, Dharmasyasya Parantava, Aprapimam Nivartande Murti Samsara Vartmani. You will come back, Krishna says. You are not going to get away from here because Shraddha wasn't there. That's a simple thing. Shraddha is not there. And you may be wondering, there's so many spiritual organizations in this world, is it not? How many spiritual organizations are there in this world, you know? So many. How many realized souls are there? Think about it. Why is it not there? As far as the production is concerned, it's a very low efficiency then. If you compare that Indian industry, spiritual industry, if you look at it, there are so many spiritual institutions and so many people are practicing spiritual life in one way or the other. But when the results, if you look into it, how many self-realized souls are coming from there? Very, very few. Is it not? Very, very few. Because, why is it like that? Because most of these people, the Shraddha is not in spiritual life, in self-realization. They are fixed on their own daily routine problems. If it's a family man, he'll be worried about the family situation or family happiness and whatever that is. Or if he is involved in politics, he'll be busy with his political issues. If he is a businessman, they all go to the temple. They are also doing spiritual life. All these politicians, businessmen and celebrities, they also go to the temple sometimes. We get happy when some celebrities come to the temple, isn't it? Because a VIP has come, we have to go and receive him now. We think as though he is the most spiritual person in the world. We start thinking like this. But what is the use? Ultimately, Shraddha is not there. He has his own ideas and his own understanding about things. So, the main thing Krishna is pointing out through that verse is, till after going through all these things, if Shraddha has not fallen on the soul, whatever you may do as sadhana, whatever you may do in this world as spiritual activity, it will not have any effect. It will not have any effect. It's not possible because he has not fixed the goal properly. It is so important, that goal, fixing the proper goal. And therefore, he says, you may study Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, everything. And you may understand something here and there. Brahman, Maya, Jiva, Prakriti, Karmam, all these kind of things you may understand. But Krishna's point is, when one develops that proper Shraddha, Vairagyam will come to that person immediately. And when that when he has decided there inside, that decision has come with full Vairagyam inside, that I have to reach that goal, and he's able to stay in that, and up to that point, and then such a person, he says, when the Vairagyam comes and he has reached that stage, very quickly Krishna says he will reach the goal. He will reach the goal. This has happened in many instances. If you look back into the history and you read about it, you will see how many powerful personalities have come through this process and realized the self in that way. In Yoga Vasishtam, Vasishtha Maharshi says to Ramachandra like this. He says, Ramachandra, you don't need many months to realize the self. And days are enough, he said. And we are thinking that, oh, I have to struggle very hard. And I have to perform many austerities and penances and everything. Vasishtha says to Ramachandra, if you really genuinely desire it, he says, you don't even need months, he says. Na masaihi dine reiva, no masaihi prapnoshimam patham dhyam. This is the word. Vasishtha uses this to Ramachandra. Na masaihi dine reiva, even months and days are not required to realize the truth. Even that is too far, he says. Months and days is too far. Because once it so happened, one disciple asked a spiritual master that how long will it take to realize the self? He asked this question.
So he replied, perhaps it may take about a minute, he said. Takes about a minute. So how will you know within 1 minute you'll realize the self? The spiritual master says, even 1 minute out of that 59 seconds is excess, he says. We don't need 59 seconds. In other words, 1 second is enough, he says. And even in 1 second, it can be realized. That is what he answered him. Because, he says, provided the person is pakvam. Maturity has come to the person. So, very matured person, he will know himself that he is ready for the truth. He will know it. You don't have to, nobody else has to point out to him. From inside, he will know he is ready for it. He is ready for it. That is how spiritual history, if you look into the personalities, you will see this. When it has happened to them, no force in this world can stop them. They will realize it at any cost. That's a power of that spiritual energy. It works like that. Because they became so matured inside that nothing in this world can stop them from realizing the truth. They come to that state. In Shaiva Siddhantam, they have an explanation to this. In a nice way, they say that there are three impurities in our identity, in the self. They say like this, that one due to ignorance, ajnanam alam, they call it, and the other one due to maya. One due to ajnanam inside, and the other one due to maya, and the third one due to karma. Third one due to karma. Karma, maya, and ajnanam. Three things. And when all the three things are very powerful in a person, then for them they require chanting, japam, austerities and penances, and they have to go and study all the shastram. Everything is necessary when these three things are present in a person. Which one? Karma malam, ajnana malam, maya malam. That's how they call it. Due to karma, we have acquired a lot of problem. Due to karma, we have created. Due to ajnanam, ajnanam means avidya, ignorance, we have created a lot of problems. And again, due to maya, there is a lot of problems what we have got. So when all the three are present in a person, you will experience that that person has a long way to go. Yeah, that man requires all the sadhana, all anushtanam, all kinds of spiritual processes. Everything is required. And if he continuously does that, he will keep on raising himself. And above all that things, his purva karma, previous life, results of previous activities in previous lifetime, only if that also becomes favorable, then there is a possibility that he will realize the truth in this lifetime. He will realize the truth in this lifetime. If your purva karma, that means from previous lifetime, if the activities are favorable, one, and then if you are engaged in sadhana or upasana or anushtanam properly to elevate yourself, and if you do all that rigorously, then it is possible that you may realize the truth in this lifetime. So, those who have got only karma problem with the karma, or problem due to jnanam inside, but who don't have maya. That also happens in people are all different. Everybody is different in this world. If you observe them, you will see in their nature. One who doesn't have any problem with maya. Maya is not a big problem for them. For some people, maya is a big problem, isn't it? Sometimes we say, Prabhu, you are in maya. As though he is not in maya. Who is, rarely you'll see people like, but there are people who are not very much disturbed by what goes on in the world. Maya does not disturb them so much. So some people are fortunate, they don't have that problem with the maya to such a degree. Everyone has a little bit, but some people have a lot more, some people have much lesser, isn't it? So it varies from person to person. But they may have another problem, karma malam. Karma malam means due to karma, they have created a lot of impurities inside. And they also have the ajnanam inside to some degree. And for them, through the process of bhakti, if they develop bhakti inside, And in course of time, if they have developed that bhakti, through the bhakti yoga process, when they come to know, Krishna consciousness develops in them, and in course of time that they may have an opportunity to experience Krishna in some form, then you can see that it can turn them into knowledge of the self. It can come to the platform of the knowledge of the self. And there are many examples for that in the history also. There are many examples like that. If you look into many, many great devotees, jnanis and all, you, if you carefully study their life, you will see some of them had some kind of problem, some prarabdham, and somebody else's different kinds of problems. Different kinds of problems. And they all reached the goal finally, fighting against the problems what they had. Fighting against the problems they had got. In some other people, there will be only one problem they'll have. Ajnanam. They have no problem with maya. They have no problem with karma. Karma is not a problem for them. They haven't done any serious karma vasana. They have not created. This you have to notice in people. They have not created any serious karma vasana by engaging in ugra karma, either in the previous life or in this lifetime. They kept fairly, reasonably away from the problems related to karma. And they don't have that problem. And also, they don't have much of a problem with maya either. But ignorance is inside. Ajnanam alav. Ajnanam is inside. And for such people, they don't require even a spiritual master. It's only some ajnanam inside. They don't even need shastram. And they don't even need sadhana. Neither sadhana nor shastram or even a spiritual master outside, because that ajnanam will, avidya inside will go. It's only waiting for the prarabdham to finish. Once their prarabdham goes away, as soon as they have experienced that prarabdham, you will notice that immediately they come, that ajnanam also goes away from inside. That ajnanam inside is due to prarabdham. Ajnanam inside is due to prarabdham. Due to prarabdham, that ajnanam is not going away. So, everyone is in different slots. You have to look at it that way. You can't put everyone in one slot and say, everybody is in the same state, everybody is going through the... No, it's not like that. Each one of us, our prarabdham is different. Our karma vasana is different. Our level of ajnanam is different. Isn't it? And we all have to fight against all these three things, basically, throughout life. So, most of us, we don't know, even know what our problems are. Sometimes we say it's prarabdham, sometimes we say it's ajnanam, or sometimes it's say we don't get involved and we say it's maya. We say like that. But maya creates problem, avidya ajnanam creates problem, karmam creates problem. All the and in different people, in different levels, it manifests. So, here, that such people who have not maya, problem with maya, who have no problem with their karmam either, but some prarabdham has to be finished. Prarabdham, you know what I'm saying. Prarabdham means when they got this body, it was decided, pre-decided earlier, that in this body you have to go through this. That's already decided. And that's till that's gone, they can't do anything. So once that prarabdham is finished, they will go come out of it, that ajnanam in them, and they will very quickly, and such people may not require any straight away any spiritual master or a shastram or any sadhana. Nothing is necessary. It's just that problem with the ajnanam inside. Ajnanam inside. Which will go when the prarabdham is over. Prarabdham is over. The example they give in the Upanishads about that is, so a crow went and sat on top of a tree and a fruit dropped from the, a ripened fruit dropped from the tree. Now, actually, the crow going and sitting on the branch of the tree and the fruit dropping from there has no connection. The fruit was ripe, so it fell. But when we say, oh, because crow has gone and sat there, therefore the fruit has dropped, we say. We connect to these two things, isn't it? We connect these two things. But practically, there is no connection. The fruit dropped because it was ripe. The crow was flying, it wanted to sit on the tree. It went and sat on that branch where the tree, where the fruit dropped from that place. So, so where each one of us are, we ourselves do not know where we are in all this. isn't it? Because we don't know about our karma vasana inside, what all karma we have created. We also do not know what prarabdham we have. We don't know what level of ajnanam we have inside. And we don't have to calculate that also. That's also not necessary to calculate all these things. All that we have to do is one thing, what Krishna is saying to us, that we have to do the right thing for ourselves, each one of us. We have to do that. And how to do that? Doing that means, first thing is to recognize that there is distress here, misery in this world. And I want to escape from this distress, miseries of this world. And once this distress has gone away, then I will be properly situated. So, therefore, studying about that distress, what kinds of distress are there? Krishna talks about that, isn't it? Any distress is in different forms, or generally we classify them as adhyatmikam, adibhaudhikam, adidevikam and all that. But Krishna has spoken about that, certain distress you can work and remove it from a person, certain distress. But certain distress, you can't do anything about it. Is it not? Some distress, first of all, you have to recognize there is distress here. And then you have to study this distress properly and come to certain firm conclusions. Some distress, you can remove it with effort. But some distress, you have no freedom there. You can't do anything about it. And therefore, Krishna told us that distress which has no solutions. Which one? Janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukha dosha anudarshanam. Birth, death, old age and disease, there is no remedy. Krishna says to us from the very beginning. So, is there a way to escape from this? Our attention and thought should go in that direction. Is there a way to escape from this distress of janma mrityu jara vyadhi? Small distress what we experience in this world, there is sometimes possible to come out of it. Is it not? By effort or something. But these four, janma mrityu jara vyadhi, it is not possible to solve it. That is the problem. So is there a way to come out of that? And an answer to that, Krishna is going to tell us, if you realize yourself who you are, that is the solution to the problem, to escape from the distress. These four distress, birth, death, old age and disease, the solution to the problem, Krishna is saying, you find out who you are first. Realize the self. And then, or in other words, when spiritual knowledge happens, at that time, all these things will not affect you. Will not affect you. Then this birth, death, old age and disease will not have any impact on you. That is the solution. In other words, when you realize that I am eternal, blissful, full of knowledge, and it is possible to reach that state while living within this body, while staying within this body, you will be able to transcend these four miseries of birth, death, old age and disease. And and this particular understanding, what Krishna has spoken, that while remaining within this body, it is possible to free yourself from this distress. That is the main message Krishna has got to give it to us. Other distress, whatever comes in life, you may be able to solve it with your effort. But these four problems, birth, death, old age and disease, Krishna is saying it is possible provided you know yourself who you are. That's the way you solve this problem of birth, death, old age and disease, to know yourself who you are. And knowing that, Krishna is saying there, it is possible to free yourself from this distress. And that process, Krishna says, once you have realized yourself who you are, you'll be able to transcend this distress. You're able to transcend this distress and you'll be able to stay in that. And they will not say, or nobody will say, this particular understanding will not come from anywhere. Doctors won't tell you this, would they? Doctors won't tell you any of these things. Doctors will say to you, if you go to him for an operation, he won't say to you that, oh, I can't give you a guarantee, he will say. Sign the form first. Whatever happens will happen, he says. Isn't it? Doctors won't say, the engineers are not going to tell you that. Scientists are not going to tell you that. The school teachers are not going to tell you that. College professors are not going to tell you that. University is not going to tell you that. But Krishna is going to tell you that. That is the difference.
Krishna is going to tell you that it is possible to come out of these four things, birth, death, old age and disease. Nobody else is going to tell you that. Ajari Swamiji mentions this in the Upanishad Bhashyam. He says like this, that in a very emotional way, he explains this, that one mother does a lot of things for us in one life. One mother does, isn't it? In one life, she does a lot. And it is difficult to return that to her for what she has done for you in one life. It's very difficult to give back to her for what she has done for every one of us, isn't it? So with one mother, you have so much obligations due to that. But that mother is only for this one life. But in several lifetimes, when we had gone through different bodies, and whatever distress we have created, and if there is a mother who removes all our distress from all these different lifetimes and gives us that realization, there is a mother like that. Who is that mother? And that mother is Vedam. Vedam is that mother. And Vedam is that mother, or Upanishads is that mother. And what does that mother do? The words are Madra Sahasraibhya Karunaya. Thousands of mothers, if they show all their compassion or mercy to the person, Shruti Janani, that Karunaya Gariyasi Shruti Janani. Ajari Swamiji says there that Madra Sahasraibhya Karunaya. Thousands of mothers, if they show all their compassion together for the child, Gariyasi Shruti Janani. Janani Shruti or Vedam is more powerful than all these thousand mothers together. Then even they will not, thousands of mothers in thousand lifetimes, how much care they have given us, even that care will not be equal to this care what Vedam gives to us or Upanishads gives to us. So that mother, Upanishad, gives us that milk which is referred to as the knowledge. So we'll have a short break. So in that sixth verse, Yadagashastito Nityam Vayu Sarvatra Gomahan Tada Sarvani Bhutani Matsani Idi Ubhadaya, which we have seen. Now, as I said before, that Madhra Sahasrebhya Karunaya Gariyasi Shruti Janani, the mother Shruti Upanishads, her compassion for us, she is so kind that she is, you can't even, hundreds, thousands of mother put together, her mercy is higher than this, higher than that. So because if Upanishads have not told us this, that it is possible to realize the self in this world. Suppose this knowledge has not been given by Upanishads to us, and it is impossible to find this knowledge anywhere else in any other scripture anywhere in the world. It's only Upanishads have told us this one thing, that it is possible to escape from birth, death, old age and disease. And it is possible to reach that state while living within this body. And it is possible that this material distress will never come back again and accept another. This guarantee nobody else is given. Any other scripture, if you want, you can look at in this world. And therefore, Upanishad's knowledge is considered is realistic, practical, and it is on. That is why Upanishads have been given such a prominent position in the Vedic literature. For this reason only. There are so many other literatures which talks to you about after death what happens, and you can go here, go there, enjoy this, enjoy that. There are so many literatures like that, is it not? So many scriptures available in this world. They all talk to you about something after death, what will happen, but never says anything it is possible in this life here. But Upanishads are saying to us, right now in this body, before leaving that body, it is possible to come out of these four
things, birth, death, old age, and this is what's happened to Parikshit, just like that, in the same way, that he has realized the truth before he left his body here. Krishna also is saying that in the Bhagavad Gita, that this knowledge, Arjuna, Rajavidya, Rajaguhyam, if one it is Mokshase Ashubhad, it will free you from all miseries here, not after death, here, before you leave this body. Body may stay there still for some time till the prarabdham is over, but you have escaped the problem. Problem is over. You are, while living in this body, body will go in its own time when it's time to go away. It will happen. So that is the important thing. So if from this, except Upanishad, there is no other shastram or scripture in the world which will tell you so boldly, declaring to the world, here it is, that knowledge of the self. So what does Upanishad means? Upanishad means it is actually the experience of the realized souls. That's what it is. And experience of realized souls. In other words, duality has gone from them. It's not the book that is Upanishads. It's the experience of these realized souls. That is what is Upanishads. And or in other words, the experience of the jnanis, all the realized souls. And they were also like us. Like us, they were human beings like us. And they stayed like that. And they suffered like us, all the distress of this life. But what they have found out was, that you can put an end to all this distress in this world. Purnata is possible. Perfection is possible. It is possible to bring it to an end in this life itself. That was their greatest discovery. That's what they have discovered. The greatest discovery was this, that it is possible to, because to tell someone that what will happen after death, like there are so many scriptures in this world who make that offer, isn't it? Telling you that after death, if you do all this, that it is on the strength of that so many people are doing so many mad things in this world, because on the strength of these statements. But Upanishads are saying to us, it's possible to bring it an end to the distress. Other scriptures are telling us in different way. Some scriptures say it's about great happiness you can get in the heavenly planets or in the next world when you go. What all possibly? That is not what Upanishad is telling us. Upanishad is not saying that language. Upanishad's language is, there is a lot of distress in this world. Some distress you can remove, but some distress you can't. And they classified them as birth, death, old age and disease. You can't free yourself from that distress, they have told us. But these rishis, the sages, they have found a solution for that problem which is not solvable otherwise. And they said, if you follow this process, and they have shown it to us through their realizations, that birth, death, age, old age and disease, you can conquer that in this very life and you don't have to suffer through that anymore afterwards. And that is the beauty of this Upanishad's knowledge. So they also lived like that, these rishis. All the rishis, if you look, whether any list of the rishis are there in the Srimad Bhagavatam, all those rishis, they lived like this, like us, and they've gone through their own problems of this world. And only thing is, they found that there is a possibility to end it, finally finish it. And that is our great relief, because they realized it that way. And they have given it to us through the Upanishads. In the Viveka Chudamani, you will find a verse about this. Acharya Swami mentions there, Swamin namaste nadaloka bantho karunya sindho patidam bhavabdho mamubharatmi yakadaksha drishtya vishyakti karunyam sudhabhi vrishtya. That is how he puts it. He says, Swamin namaste nadaloka bantho. O Master, the disciple is going to the rishi and talking to the rishis and saying to him, Swamin namaste, I pay my obeisances to you, nataloka bandho, because you are actually the friend of this, our human species. Why? Karunya sindho patidam bhavabdho. You have shown us such a mercy that what you have given us, karunya sindho patidam bhavabdho. Bhavabdho means, I have fallen into this cycle of birth and death. I do not see any way of escaping from this. That means the student who is going is very conscious of what he is saying. He has come to realize it, that this business, I must put an end to this. What? This cycle of birth and death. How many times I have come here in different bodies, suffered so much, I have gone back, again coming back. This cycle is unbearable, he says.
Swami, karunya sindho padidam bhavabdho.
And I don't know how to escape myself from this situation. That is the only final solution to all the problems. That is why Krishna is saying that till you realize the self, everything else is a patchwork in this world. People are into so many patchwork business in this. Hospitals, schools, this, that. So many things they're trying to do. But without knowledge, what is the use? That's the point he's making there.
That karunya siddho padidam bhavabdho. Maam udhar atmiya kadaksha drishtya.
Please elevate me by your mercy. Kadaksha drishti. That means by your spiritual strength. You release me from this. And
krishyadi karunya sudhavi drishtya.
Karunya sudhavi drishtya. That sudha, that nectar, what comes from your eyes, which is full of compassion and mercy. A person who is in the realized state can do a lot good to this world than anybody else. Nobody can do that help what he can do to the world. This is why they say that realizing yourself is the highest welfare activity, not opening schools or hospitals. Realizing the self is the highest welfare activity, because by your realization, what will happen? The whole world gets benefited. Many other people, because you are actually removing that ajnanam from another person, avidya, being an example of self-realization. That's why Krishna is saying that. That there is, in Vedic system, therefore there is not so much stress given to these kind of things. Which one? Hospitals, schools and others. They are called ishtapurtam. Ishtapurtam means, if you do such activities, it will give some benefit, like a pious activity. It is considered to be like a pious activity. Ishtapurtam it is. But if you develop Shraddha, Bhakti, self-realization, and one realized soul can elevate many others from this mess, from this ajnanam, avidya state. Therefore, he says to him, Maam udhar almiya kadaksha drishtya. For that person has to be very realized. Otherwise, it's not possible. If he's not realized, he can't do very much about it. He will pull you down also into the same situation what he is in.
Karunya siddho.
So he says that I'm just drowning in this ocean. He's comparing the cycle of birth and death, samsaram, material existence, like an ocean. I'm drowning in that ocean, he says. What is that? What is that, he says? That ocean is bhavam. Bhavam means bhavam. Bhavam means becoming. Becoming. You know, we have that strong push inside every one of us. I want to become something. I want to become something. There's nothing to become. There's nothing to become. This becoming is a disease. I want to become something, isn't it? To become bhavam. That's what the word bhavam means. You will see the word bhavam in the Bhagavatam in so many places. The word bhavam is used. So, even little children, when they start growing up, parents or the family, other members starts asking the child, what do you want to become? You want to become a doctor, engineer or this or that, so many things. From that day, he starts his becoming business. And then it never ends. Throughout life, it's becoming this, becoming that, becoming that. So it becomes a disease at that time. And then the whole life carries on in that way. So, so he starts running in that direction. But when you come to, when you are in the spiritual life, in Adhyatmam, if you bring that nature in, so it's the same disease comes. The same disease comes to spiritual life also. It's a vyadhi, it is. This becoming bhavam. What is that vyadhi? I have to become a realized soul. That is also a vyadhi. And I have to get liberated. And at that time also, from inside, the mind is creating this thought all the time. I have to become something, but I have to become something. Even in a very subtle level, this will happen. I have to become something. So, you can see this problem, and in spiritual life, when we come to if there is a lot of desires and vasanas inside, it will come out like this. I have to become this, I have to become that. And endless it is, this becoming business. And it goes on and on. And very extremely subtle level, realized souls talk about this. So please give up this desire that I have to become something, I have to become something. Because if you start traveling along with that thought, and you will go along with the mind, and you will not give attention to what is right now where your attention should be. That's the problem. When this becoming business starts, or that disease, bhavam, bhavarogam, you will see, bhave bhave yadha bhakti padayor stava jayade tadha kurushva devesham nadhastunno yada prabho nama sangirtanam yasya sarvabhava pranashanam pranamo dukkashamanam tam namami harim param. In the Bhagavatam you will see that bhave bhave, that bhavam bhavam, it has to be, Bhagavatam says it should be only bhakti 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 yadha bhakti for Krishna's lotus feet. Only then it is worthwhile. Otherwise, there are so many places in the Bhagavatam you will see this word used, bhavam. Bhavam problem is this with bhavam. Bhavam will create a program for us to become something, and along with that the mind will go with that idea, with that thought. With that thought the mind will go along with that, and once the mind starts going like that, it is not going to happen. That's why I say, it says that at this moment I don't want anything, and if you develop that, then only the attention will fall, or Shraddha will fall on the soul. Will fall on the soul. So the greatest obstacle in spiritual realization is this becoming business. I have to become something. I have to become a guru. I have to become a jnani. I have to become a something else, whatever. Endless is this. I have to have so many followers. I have to have build this big ashram or this or that. Like this unlimited way things come, and mind will go behind that. And then what the result is that the mind won't give attention to the soul. The soul will not be taken notice of. All the thought waves will drive us away from that. So what is right now here, right at this moment in us, we won't give attention to that. So at the moment we are not in the world, we are in the mind. We live in the mind, isn't it? Therefore, what has happened? Whatever opportunity it comes, we don't give attention to that. We don't give attention to that. So one who is always situated in the mind, that person cannot have Shraddha. Shraddha will not grow in a person who is always in the platform of the mind. 90% people is in the mind, isn't it? 90% people live in the mind. We may agree or not agree, that's another thing. But the reality is that 90% of our time is also in the mind. There's very little we do otherwise. Our whole existence is in the mind. Whole existence is in the mind. Even while we are sitting here now discussing Bhagavad Gita, and 10% may be absorbed into what is you are talking about. But 90% is still some other thoughts in the background is going on. What do I have to do tonight when I get home? And tomorrow is Monday. Those who have to go back to work, and what will be there I have to face with. And so many other things like this will happen all the time. So this is because the mind has taken so much control over us, and it has become difficult. So even in the Salsangam, if you go outside and look at two people are talking to each other, if you give attention to them, you will see two people are not talking actually. Two people are not talking. One person is talking and the other person is waiting for this person to stop. Have you noticed that? It always happens. It's quite common it is that two people meet with each other in the, say, supermarket or in the street somewhere, high street or somewhere. They meet each other. Or one person, very often you will notice this. And they'll be talking, and you'll be thinking that the other person is listening to everything what this person is saying. One person is saying all his problems or her problems to the other person. The other person is not hearing. Very little he picks up from there, what he heard. Because he has his own problem. It's all of our personal experience that is. When you have your own problems so much, somebody is coming and telling you his problems. You are not able to give any attention to it. It's not possible, isn't it? Because the mind has got its own limited capacity to absorb other things also. So when what do? You wait till that person finish and then you come up with some solution. Because you know that he's telling his problems, so you have to console that person. So you say something and you move away from there. But you can see this one thing. What does it show? It shows to us, all of us live in our own mind. Our own mind. We are not so transcendental as we think we are. We are very much on the mental platform. All of us, all the time. So, so you can see that both of them, there is no listening involved in either case. There is no listening is shravanam. Listening is shravanam. There is no shravanam there. There is no shravanam there. So as long as this mind is wandering around all over the world, so that long we won't be able to hear. We won't be able to hear. And we won't grasp it. We won't accept it also. And we won't be able to give attention to the vastu, what is present in front of us, which is the soul. The soul, what is present there, we won't be able to give attention to that, so long as this mind is wandering around. And we can see this also in our own life, that we find this mind as a great, crossing the greatest problems in many ways. That's why all this entertainment and all, people like it. Why? Because at least at that time the mind gets this something to feed into the mind. What people generally do, Shanti, sometimes by Krishna's arrangement, we all get sometimes peace. We get some peace. If you live a normal life, sometimes, normal means that if you don't involve in too many activities in this world, Chittavritti sometimes does come down on its own. And naturally, at that time, you will feel some peace. But then we will go and destroy it. As soon as you get some peace, what do? You go and watch the television. And then create some more Chittavritti. Only then you feel peace about it. Or you will go and start some new work somewhere else. Start doing something. Why? Inside there's no peace. Even Krishna gives you some shanti, you won't take it. That's the problem with this mind. Krishna gives you some shanti and tells you that, look, there's not serious problem. Your body-wise, health-wise, it's okay. There's no otherwise something serious to disturb you in life. Be peaceful and shanti. Have experienced that shanti? No. We'll find some new thing to start somewhere else. We'll go and jump into something else and create another wave inside. So this is the problem. This is how we destroy the shanti. Shanti is there because shanti does comes to us sometimes from inside. It is a flow of thing there. So that experience there, that as long as it's there, you can only give and take instructions from the mind. You can only take the instructions from the mind. So this is called, when you keep taking instructions from the mind, it's called bhavam. Bhavam is the word they have used for that. Because mind is wandering here, there, everywhere. So you can see here what happens because of that in vyavaharam also. In the vyavaharam, in the transactions in this world, and also in the world outside, when without any prejudice or without any bias, If without that, you can't do anything here in this world. There will be some prejudice or some bias in every activity in this world. If you do something, one person will get you happy, another person will be upset about it. That's the very nature of the karma in this world. If you think you can do a lot of good to this world and go and jump into anything, you'll only be creating your own, it will only destroy your own shanti inside. That is the principle behind that. So that is the precondition that you cannot do anything in vyavaharam or in the world to please some or to do something good without creating any prejudice or bias towards someone. It will happen, bound to happen. It's bound to happen like that. So as long as all these things are going on, you will not be able to see the vastu, what is inside, where our attention should be. It will not go there. Attention will not go to that vastu inside. So, So even if you close your eyes down, if you close down your eyes, whatever that going through the mind, that's what you are seeing at that time. Even if you close your eyes, isn't it? So, so as long as this goes on, what the mind tells us, and if you start noticing that mind is dictating to me, I'm working by the instructions of the mind, and you will not notice where the mind is originating from. You won't notice it. So long as all your attention is on the mind and you are taking instructions from the mind, you will not notice where the mind is taking its birth from. That's where we are interested. In the Shastram is talking about the birth of the mind. So, this is two things, Sankalpam and Vikalpam, isn't it, for the mind. So when the Sankalpa Vikalpam, which is what is known as the wandering of the mind, mind wanders, and this is that wandering, Sankalpam and Vikalpam. So when that stops, you will notice that all your things outside also will happen in a nice way, because when the mind gets involved, it makes everything dirty, it contaminates everything. That's what the mind does. So at that time you can see that you will be able to engage in the process of self-inquiry. So not allowing, taking instructions from the mind and not being influenced by the mind to stay in that state, that is called a Shraddha. That is Shraddha. That is what Shraddha means. That means mind is not dictating to you anything, and you are not taking instructions from the mind anymore, and able to live in that state, that is the state of Shraddha. Shraddha there. So only a person who has got that Shraddha, he'll be able to realize the truth, Krishna is saying there. So a person who has got Shraddha, he will be always alert on his own. He'll be alert in the proper way, alert. Alertness, generally what we say, when we say somebody is alert, we say, oh, he's very sharp mind, we say. Sharp mind or sharp intelligence. Sometimes we address like that, is it not? But that is not Shraddha. That's not Shraddha, mind and intelligence. When your mind and intelligence is not functioning and it's not causing disturbances and not dictating to you to wander around in this world, that state is called Shraddha, which makes a big difference, isn't it? Shastrasya, Guru Vakyasya, Satya Buddhyava, Dharana, Sa, Shraddha, Iti Kathyade. Vivekachudamani says that. That means in Shastram, instructions in the Shastram, in the instructions of the spiritual master, Satya Buddhyava, Dharana. Satya Buddhyava, Dharana means that you have total faith there. There is no movement. It's not causing any disturbance inside the mind. Mind is not coming and analyzing Shastram. Shastram should not be analyzed by the mind. If mind is analyzing Shastram and intelligence is analyzing Shastram, then that is not Shastric study. It's not studying Shastram. Shastram means that Satya Buddhyava Dharana. You have to totally accept what is spoken there. Particularly we are referring to Upanishad's knowledge. Knowledge of the Upanishad. Such a person will be able to execute his vyavaharam also in this world without any false ego coming in. Ahangaram won't be there. So he'll be able to conduct his vyavaharam without the influence of ahangaram. That is the beauty. That is the beauty. Able to do everything what they have to do without any influence of ahangaram. You will notice this in all the great personalities, great realized souls. They have done this and showed it to us. This is the beauty, that there is no kartrutvam, there is no bhoktrutvam, no ragam, no dvesham, attachment, aversion, ownership, doer, enjoyer, nothing there. That means there is no ahangaram there. Ahangaram is these four things, isn't it? They are all taking birth from ahangaram. From false ego takes birth, I am the doer, I am the enjoyer, attachment, aversion, everything. So realized souls, when you look at them, you will notice this. They can do so much in this world, but still least affected by anything. And that is a symptom of realization. Self-realization, which you can observe sometimes in people like that, isn't it? So, as such a person who is busy with the mind or who takes instruction from the mind, he will not be able to execute dharma. That's not possible. One who takes instructions from the mind or instructions from the detection of the mind, he will not be able to execute dharma in this world. Because people, generally we talk about love, sneham, love, we say like that, isn't it? Everybody talks about, oh, you have to love each other, you have to love your neighbor, you have to love this, you have to love everybody. But what is love means, that is the question, isn't it? Everybody says to us, oh, we should all live in this world loving each other. We say like that. So, you can see, love is not an emotion, first thing. Love is not an emotion. This is a misunderstanding. Love is not an emotion. As long as it remains as an emotion, if love is considered as emotion, it is not considered as love. If it is as an emotion, if you take it, that is selfishness it is. Any love in this world, if it has come as on the emotional platform, if it is working, then it is selfishness. It is selfishness. because what will happen to that love is, as long as that emotion is inside me, I may think that I am doing something good to somebody. Purely based on that emotions I am working at that time. Purely based on the emotions. I will think that I am doing something good to others. But such a person you can never trust. You can never trust. And you can look at that in this world itself. Some people show a lot of emotions and they show love towards you with a lot of emotions. But you will never know when they will turn 180 degrees and turn totally opposite to you. And because when they feel that love for you or priyam for you, they'll do a lot of things and give everything to you, and they'll do anything what you tell them to do, everything they'll do that. But the moment such a person who is on that level, who creates love as an emotion, that same person, with the next moment it is possible, he will create hate as another emotion. It will come through the same person. The hate will come through that person. So that also you can see here. And when that hate comes in that person towards you, you will never know that the intensity of that hate sometimes will be more than the intensity of love what he has shown to you. So love-hate business is like that. As long as it is on the platform of emotional level, it will happen like this. It will happen. That's the nature of this world. There's nothing we can do about it. So this you can see in this world many times. But actually love is a dharma. It's considered to be a dharma. So what is the difference? Difference is this. whether he likes it or not, that's what is good for him, you have to know. What's good for the other person. And if you do that for him, knowing well that is beneficial for that person, particularly in the spiritual life, that is called love. That is love. Not other things. Based on the emotions and all. No, you can't judge anything. That will all completely change the whole scene one day. It won't survive very long. You can see this in the world also many times. It happens in individual level. It happens in a national level. One country is friendly with another country for a few years. Then the whole thing changes. He becomes friend with the enemy of the other country. And then relationship starts like that, which is called politics basically. Because there is no proper, it's all based on emotions and selfishness behind it, isn't it? So dharmam cannot be executed unless a person has proper knowledge behind it. So sneham or love is a dharmam, and whatever happens, whether the other person like it or not, doesn't matter. But you have done with the what I have to do for that person, I am doing it. If you do it that way, that is dharma, that is love, that is proper love. So for, not that otherwise whether I like it, what I am doing or not, and if I if I like it, then I'll do it. Or if that person like it, I'll do it. No, not based on liking. not in that way. So you person who lives in this world in dharmam, you can trust him. A person who lives in this world in dharmam, you can trust him, because he will not behave with you according to his mind. He will not dance according to the mind. He will give the respect, offer the respect to the person where it is to be given, and he will deal everything in a very proper way. He will be able to act in the proper way. So, or the way one has to behave, he will behave in the proper way. So you can see this difference there itself, that how he has to behave properly, he will behave in that way. No, not that somebody I like, so I will show all my love and affection for him. Somebody I don't like, so I hate him, and I will show all my hate towards that person. So, so today someone who does something to us because he likes us, and that person tomorrow will do to us something totally opposite because he hates us in the same way. It can happen in this life. So the knowledge behind that is without ishtam anishtam. That means like and dislike. Without that, will not be affecting him. He does not operate in this world based on I like somebody or hate somebody. On that basis, he will not operate in this world. In other words, hate and dvesham, hate and anger will not develop in that person. So how will this happen? This state, dharmam, through shraddha. Only through shraddha this will happen. Only a person who has got shraddha in him, you will find a dharmam. Dharmam also in him. So for everything, the mother is shraddha. Shraddha is the mother. So if we have come to the same conclusion that I have to do the right thing for me, each one of us have to think like this. I have to do the right thing for me. If that approach has come and I have to elevate myself, Alpmanam, Uddhared Alpman, Alpmanam, Alpmanam, Avasadet. Krishna says that in the 6th chapter. Alpmanev, Alpmano Bandhu, Alpmayvajibir Alpmana. There is a verse there, isn't it? So I have to come to that understanding that each one of us, that I have to elevate myself. I have to do what is good for me, the right thing. I have to come to that conclusion myself first. Without that, nothing else can be done. So, what is the process? So, the process is that if I have made the decision that I have to acquire a lot of wealth in this world, or if I have made the decision that the body should always remain very healthy, and my relatives and friends, relations, all immediate relations or close members of the family, they should all remain very happy and healthy. And if you take it a little bit further than that, if you start saying that everyone in this world also should become healthy, loka samasta sukhino bhavantu, you can say all these things, including that statement, loka samasta sukhino bhavantu. It's a famous statement, isn't it? From say like that, loka samasta sukhino bhavantu, let all the world be happy. You can say all these things, that's okay, but practically it is not possible. It's not possible. That the conclusion of the rishis. Rishis are saying to us that you can say all these things, you can think that everybody should be happy in this world, the whole world will remain as a one family and everybody, that's why we started this globalization, isn't it? To make the whole family happy. All kinds of ideas will come out like this, but they are meant for the United Nations, not for spiritual life. In spiritual life, what will work practically, they are telling us, that only knowing what is dharmam first, and that dharmam is there in a person's dealings with the world, then naturally whatever he does will be properly based on love. That is a proper love. Not the love based on I like somebody and I don't like somebody. That is not dharmam. So, therefore he says, in a very short period of time, you will realize is that our body and the mind will never remain in a happy state all the time. It is not going to happen. Body and the mind will never stay in a happy state all the time. Desiring that is nice, that's okay, but in reality it won't happen because it is not possible. Suppose I want to stay happy, I want to be happy with my body, with my mind, it may happen. But then if you extend that further, it may not happen. It may happen that too. This is all imaginary ideas that I will remain happy, or my family will remain happy, or my relations will remain happy. We are extending it further and further. But what we have to realize that in the platform of the body and the mind, you cannot be happy, your family cannot be happy, all your relations cannot be happy. It's not going to happen. If you are happy, you will see some problems in the family. Or if there is some problem, if there is family is happy, you will see there is some problem on your own. And if both of them are there, you will see them some relations are unhappy. To get a proper balance in all these things is not possible. That is why Krishna says it, because actually we have no connection with them. That we don't know. We are always thinking we are all connected together in the bodily level. So deep rooted is this bodily connections. That it always keeps you in this illusion that we are all connected because we all belong to the same family, we all belong to the same community or society or whatever that is. Or these are all my relatives, so we should also be happy together. This illusion is working very strong in our head. But actually, there is no connection anywhere between anybody. Between anybody. And therefore, they are not going to be happy the way we think about them. It's not going to be. Problems will continuously come one after the other. And it will come and going, and you will be simply trying to sort out, plug the hole everywhere. That will be the main business, what will be going on. So, you can see here that to think that we can all stay together happily in this world, at least in my lifetime, everything will be okay. It won't. By then a tsunami will come from somewhere. Some tsunami will come, either in the form of an earthquake or a war or something like that will happen. And none of them, you will be able to stop it. You won't be able to hold on. You won't be able to stop any of those things. It will come, and sometimes you can see the whole community, society, and thousands and thousands of people with all their assets and deposits and love and everything what they had each other, in one lot the whole thing goes. Isn't it? You see that all the time. When the way the banks and others advertising that you have to have so much insurance and so much money in the bank and sometimes what happens? Something like this earthquake or tsunami, something comes and the whole banks itself go. The person who has deposited, he's not there. The person with whom you have deposited the money, he is also gone. Everything goes in one lot, isn't it? So, similarly, they are in a very gross level. We are talking about in a big scale, huge scale. In a smaller scale also, if you look at it, within the family, your own family, and within your own relations, you can see this. Thinking this illusion of this is my cousin, that's my cousin, this is that, this, so many designations we have created, isn't it? Based on this body. They have all come together because there is some little karma to be sorted out with all these members of the family. That's finished and they have gone. But we'll keep them in the mind so long as this body is there, or they are all a part of me, and you're not showing any connection with us and meeting together and celebrating birthdays and all other things together, feeling a great happiness from all that. Shastram is telling us there is no connection between any two people. There is no connection between any people. That is why none of them you will be able to hold on to it. You won't be able to stop it either when distress comes in that way. And that's what we see in a family life all the time. Bedram karne vishniyama devaha, Upanishad says. Vedam is saying, what is Bedram? Bedram karne vishniyama devaha. In other words, what it says, what is auspicious, he says here, we have to open our eyes and see the reality. Open our eyes and see the reality. You have seen this cat when it gets into the kitchen and it knows where the milk is. So the housewife has left some milk in the kitchen and the cat knows where the milk is. So sometimes during the night or something, when you are watching the television or doing something else, the cat goes to the kitchen and it wants to drink that milk. It cannot stop. It has so much desire to drink that milk. So what it does, it will jump into the shelf or wherever you have kept it. And in that process, it will make a lot of noise and the milk will fall. Pot will tilt and all the milk will come out on the floor. When the milk falls on the floor, you are still busy somewhere. But the cat knows it's possible that somebody may come. So what does the cat do? Cat closes its eyes and drink the milk. It keeps licking the milk on the floor, keep the eyes closed. It thinks that if it keeps the eyes closed, there won't be any problem. Nobody will notice it. This is common in India. Here it's not so much because it's different here, isn't it? So it's just that the way it works, it is like that. So they give that example that if you, why does it close the eyes? Because it wants the milk. And at the same time, if somebody comes and notices it, it knows that it will get you out from there because you are stealing the milk, isn't it? Kept for some other purpose. So what does it do? It closed the eyes. It thought the best solution is to close the eyes and drink the milk. And that's what we are all doing in this world. That's what we are doing. Actually, what we do is paramarthiyam. Paramarthiyam means what is crystal clear to us, what's going to happen to us one day as far as this world is concerned. And we are trying to, and we are trying to ignore all that things, all those realities, and trying to escape from that by absorbing in so many other activities. So we have to know what the truth is, and we have to act on the basis of that truth. Then that is dharmam. Otherwise it is not. So after that, what do you have to do? With that understanding, vairagyam must develop inside a person. Vairagyam should develop inside a person. Vairagyam does not mean hate. That also we have to know. Vairagyam does not mean you have to hate. Everything is there, but you don't want to stick to anything. That is vairagyam. Everything is there in this world. You may have a family. You may have parents, grandparents, children, grandchildren, all of things in this life, but no sticking anywhere. That is vairagyam. You don't have to hate them, because that has come due to purva karma, prarabdham, has brought all of that connections. But not sticking to anything, that is what. Only in that way, if you act in this world, hitam will happen. So, only by that alone, hitam will come. Because, this is in one level, this is understanding. But beyond than that, this inquiry, that behind this creation, is there another truth? That inquiry is the most important thing. Is there a truth behind it? Is there a way, on an absolute platform, is it possible to escape from this distress of this life, or that is birth, death, old age and disease? If this inquiry is happening, such a person, is it possible to reach that state of shanti or peace or the bliss that comes from there, and what is the nature of that swarupam or the bliss? And such a person who is thinking in this direction and who is making that inquiry of the self deeper level, such a person has got Shraddha. He has got Shraddha. So and that person will reach the goal. That person will reach goal. And he will wake up into his Swarupam. In his Swarupam. And he will know himself. Because only if you know about yourself, you will come to know about the world, what it is. First you have to know, realize the self before you realize the world. Before you realize the world. Realize the world or to realize Krishna. To realize Krishna. Even to realize Krishna, you have to realize the self first. You have to realize the self first. So, a person who has realized that, what is his experience? I'm not this body. That's the first thing. I'm not this body. I'm not this mind. I'm pure and eternal Atma, the soul. And there is no imperfection in me. That is the nature of the soul. Imperfection in me. And bliss is my nature. Swarupam is my nature, is bliss. And that is the only truth in this world. That's the only truth in this world. Once this has happened, if you look in any directions and in any objects, you will know that that is what is hiding behind every object, this reality. Of that blissful experience, what you are having within the self, you will observe in all other living objects in this world. Ananda imani bhutani jayante samvishandi, Shruti says in the Taittiriya Upanishad, that ananda imani bhutani jayante. You will see that in the Upanishads, Taittiriya Upanishads, where Bhrguvali, that is Bhrgu and Varuna talking to each other, that state is spoken, what happened to him. People ask this question always, what is the state of self-realization, what he will do. Same thing Arjuna asked Krishna. Same thing Uddhava also asked Krishna. isn't it? You'll see in the Bhagavad Gita as well as in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has answered in the second chapter that question. Sthita prajnasya ga bhasha samadhisthasya keshava. When Arjuna asked that question, Krishna answered that. Sthita prajnatvam, that is the nature of that person. And similarly, Uddhava also asked the same question to Krishna. Krishna has answered that, quoting Bhagavad Gita at the same time in the Bhagavatam, the same thing. So, whole creation is coming from bliss. That is the answer. Whole creation is coming from bliss. It stays in bliss. It stays in bliss, anandam. And it eventually disappears in the bliss. And in this creation, except, Upanishad says, nothing exists here except bliss. Except bliss. There is no distress anywhere. There is no distress anywhere. And this experience of Upanishads, what the rishis are saying to us, the jnanis realize that and they confirm that to us in their realization. When they experience that, that's what they tell us also. That the same statement in the Upanishads, they are the living examples of that. Living examples of that. So, they are the people, as far as he is concerned, he has already transcended the miseries of material existence, of birth, death, old age and disease. So, even after they have crossed that, I'm talking about the self-realized souls now, even after they have crossed that, still it is possible, for unknown reason, they will feel a compassion towards the world. Compassion towards the world. That is what in this verse it says there, Ahaituka Kripa Sindho. So, that Karunya Sindho Paditam Bhavabdho Mam Uddhar Almanam. So, in other words, there is no reason for that. If you ask what is the reason he is feeling that compassion, there is no answer to that. A person, after self-realization, without any reason, they feel a compassion. Or they want to give something auspicious to this world. And normally we say that what we address as Ishvara, controller. Krishna is addressed as Ishvara sometimes, isn't it? What does this Ishvara mean? Ishvara is this power or potency in the realized souls which comes in this world. As a form of compassion it comes. All the great personalities, if you look, you will see this compassion in them. That is Krishna. That is Ishvara. When we seeing Ishvara, Ishvara, the word Ishvara means that. This compassion in them, that is a special power, Krishna working through these realized personalities. Without any consideration for a living entity showing undue compassion to everyone. That mercy that comes from them, grace, what comes through them, is Ishvara. It is not the property of an individual. It's not the property of an individual. It is Krishna's grace that is working through that person. When a person is self-realized, through some persons, not everyone, through them it comes out. This Kripa, Krishna's grace, comes out through them. And when it comes out through them, it is called Ishvara. When the grace comes out through them. And that is why it is mentioned here that Durvara Samsara Davagni Gavagni Tattvam Dodhuyamanam Duradrishtavate Bidam Pravennam Parivahi Mrityu Sharanam Anyat Ahamna Jani. When this disciple goes to the spiritual master in extreme distress, he is going to him. A spiritual master, a disciple is supposed to approach the spiritual master in extreme distress. We go to spiritual master laughing and smiling, isn't it? Completely happy. I'm getting initiated today. It's like a festival it is. Like a festival. We want to celebrate that. And then we come to everyone, give me some mercy, Prabhu. Give me your blessings, we say. What does it all mean? What does it all mean? In the Shastram saying, disciple goes to a spiritual master, when he goes, his state of mind is spoken, he is in extreme distress, he is feeling. That says, I have no escape from here. I have suffered enough in this world. Is there a way of getting out from here? from this miseries of material life, birth, death, old age, disease, and so many other problems, this bhavam, becoming this, becoming that, all this. So, durvara samsara davagni davagni tattvam dodhuyamanam duradrishta vateihi. That I am so depressed with the whole thing, unquenchable fire, it says. That's what I am going through inside. The whole thing is burning inside the person. The person who is trying, seeking the truth. He should be burning inside with that fire inside, burning. And that's how he's approaching them. And he says, and at that time, what is the situation with the spiritual master? The disciple is burning inside. Head is burning, the mind is burning. It's like a oven inside with the distress of this life. At the same time, what is the situation of the spiritual master? Shando, Mahando, Nivasandi Sando, Vasandamallokahitam Charandaha. That is his state. Shando Mahando Nivasandi Sando Vasandavallokahitam Charandaha. Shandam is peaceful inside because he has realized the truth. He has realized the truth. Shando Mahando and Mahandam, and he is such a Mahalpa that so much Shandi inside because of the realization of the truth. That is the spiritual master's state. Shando Mahando, then Nivasandi Sando, that he is situated in such a way, he is so magnanimous that he wanted to be only of some use to somebody. This thought inside a person that he wants to give that compassion and feeling that karunyam or grace or mercy towards someone else, that is not an ordinary thing. That is Krishna. That is Krishna, that is. That coming through that person or through that realized soul to save somebody else, that is Krishna's grace. So that's why it mentioned Shando Mahando Nivasandi Sando Vasandaval Lokahitam Charandaha. And he is moving around in this world only for the benefit of the rest of the others. That is Krishna's grace. When such a person who wants to save others, save means this, that Krishna's kripa, grace, is coming through him because he has seen the truth. Like Bhagavad Gita says, isn't it? That such a person through whom Krishna's grace is flowing incessantly and able to save others, that is that state. Shando Mahando Nivasandi Sandaha Vasandaval Lokahidam Charandaha Tirnaswayam Bhima Bhavarnavam Jana Nehadu Nanyanavi Sarayandaha. In other words, at that time what he says to him is that his that spiritual master's situation is different than the disciple's situation. Disciple is burning inside with this desire to escape from this fire of material existence, birth, death, old age and disease and all the miseries of this world, and he is looking for a solution and he is asking the spiritual master, is there a way out from this? Spiritual master's situation is Shando, Mahando, Nivasandi Sandaha. That is so Shandi inside in that person that Krishna's grace is coming through him in abundance. It's flowing through him. And as soon as that the disciple sees that, he feels that same experience from the association of that realized soul. It happens to him. So, and they move around in this world, not particularly with any reason, but there's no reason. He himself does not know why he's doing that. He himself does not know. So, why he has to move around like this? He also does not know. And what is his situation? Just like a dry leaf which has fallen from the tree. How it is being carried away by the wind. That is his state at that time. When a dry leaf falls from this on the tree, it has no independence, isn't it? Wherever the wind takes the leaf, it has to go. To that extent, he is surrendered to the truth, that person. He is surrendered to the truth to such an extent that he has no any independence, that realized soul. He has no. Similarly, he is realized. Tattvajnanam has happened to him. He is liberated at the same time. Such a person who is liberated and at the same time who has completely realized the truth, such a person, Krishna's that power, Krishna's Ishwara Shakti, Krishna's power or Krishna's grace or mercy, whatever it is, destiny it will drag him to different places according to Krishna's desire. Krishna will drag that person to a particular place according to Krishna's plan. According to Krishna's plan, it will happen. And at different places, he will be driven by that. And you can't forcefully give that mercy to anybody. You can't forcefully give that mercy to anybody. So, because if you want to light the lamp, you need the oil, you need the wick, and you also need the fire to light a lamp, isn't it? Similarly, a light has to be burning somewhere. Light has to be burning somewhere. And if you go on your own, if you go there, and if you have all the other things, you can light your lamp from the other burning lamp. But the other lamp is not burning, you can't light yourself from the other lamp. It will not burn. Both lamps won't be working. That's all. If you have an oil lamp, you are burning oil, and if there's a lamp burning, then you can bring another wick and you can give fire to that from the fire what is burning there already. But if the other lamp is also not burning, what can you get from there? Lamp that. So, how a disciple goes to a spiritual master, and that disciple's state of consciousness and the consciousness of the spiritual master, these are very important things. These are very important things. And all these things are never taken into account in these days, isn't it? It's never taken. Nobody thinks about all these things. Because what happens is, institution tells us that this is what you have to do, and we just do it without asking any question. You're not allowed to ask any question. If you ask any question, there will be no discussion about that. So therefore, it is mentioned here that such a person who doesn't have a will of his own, a self-will, doesn't exist in him, and only such a person and who doesn't have a self-will, from him you can go take a lamp and get your lamp lit from that person. And otherwise, if that lamp wants on its own, it cannot do it. That lamp which is burning already, it cannot do it. You have to go to him. Therefore, even great personalities, if they want to give it, they can't give it. They can't give it on their own. Therefore, but they can be available, that's all. They can be available to others, that's all. It's up to us to make ourselves qualified for that and get the lamp lit from that lamp which is burning. That is the process. That's how it works. So, just like Ganga River is flowing, but to go and bathe in the Ganga River, we have to make the decision first. Isn't it? In a similar way, Ganga is not going to come to us. We have to go towards Ganga to bathe in Ganga River. In a similar way, in spiritual life also, that we ourselves has to go and light the lamp from that person. But in order that to happen, the maturity has to happen first within us. The Shraddha has to build up. Bhakti has to build up inside. And that capacity to make ourselves mature, that capacity is called Shraddha. Shraddha is that. So once that Shraddha has come, that you can more or less take it that the Ishvara, Krishna's grace, has started waking up inside that person. Once that Shraddha has started building up. So then that Shraddha will never go away from, it will not come from the mind at that time. When Shraddha starts developing in a person, you can take it more or less that Krishna's grace has started working in that person. Working in that person. So this you will see if you look back into many, many great personalities. You will notice this. They were a class of their own. They were a class of their own. You will notice that, like Ramatirtha's case for example, you will observe that very early age in life, he had no attraction for anything. Where is that coming from? That realization. Vivekananda's case, you will see the same thing. And so many others, at a very early age in life, they had done what they have acquired that. Where did that strength come from? Come from the previous lifetimes. That Shraddha has grown so big, but even at a very early age in life, inquiry has begun inside. Inquiry has begun inside. In many cases, it gets very late for that to happen due to prarabdham. It happens much later. So, So you can see this that many devotees' case also, those who this Shraddha has woken up very early in life, they will act very fast and they will come out of this material existence very quickly. But in many cases, it doesn't happen that way. Very much later in life, everything starts. So, so this is why it's mentioned there that rishis are also saying to us that they will always say like this, they will say very little about these things because Vedahamevam Purusham Mahandam Adityavarnam Tamasaparastam. That only in the Shedashvadara Upanishad, there is only one place while referring to the same thing comes in the Purusha Suktam also, it means that rishis are saying like this. If you look into the 7th chapter, in the 7th verse, you will see this mentioned there. In the Bhagavad Gita, 7th chapter, in the 7th verse, Krishna mentions there, that verse there, in the purport, you will see, Vedahametam Purusham Mahandam Adityavarnam Tamasaparasad Tameva Vidwan Amrudamehya Bhavadi Nanya Pandha Vidyade Ayanayam Yasmat Param Nabaram Astikinjal Yasmananiyo Najayo Astikinjal. I'll read the translation. I know that Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is transcendental to all material conceptions of darkness, only he who knows him can transcend the bonds of birth and death. There is no way for liberation other than this knowledge of that Supreme Person. So that's how it mentions there. But actually you can see that all the other verses, if you go back to the Upanishad and look at that verse, it mentions like this, that Upanishad says, rishis are saying here, that I don't know how to put it to you, he says, but I cannot say that I don't know, he says. I don't know how to put it to you, but I cannot say that I don't know about it. Whoever has given to me this before, Brahmaya, I have got this realization, this is how they have given it to me. That is how he presented in that verse, Vedantam Eham Edam Purusham Mahantam. So therefore, you can see that jnanis are realizing this truth at different places. After they have realized, they talk about it. After realization, they talk about it. Thaimanavar mentions this also. He says that when you give, the difference is this. When places where there is a lot of crow who is looking for the food, something. Suppose you have cooked some rice or something and brought out and you threw a little bit of rice onto the ground outside. One crow may notice that and he'll come and eat that rice. But while eating, have you noticed the crow will invite everybody else to come. All other crow. It will invite all other crows to come and join. Because he says to them, look, there is a feast here. Come. Come. The feast is there. So, similarly, a realized soul also is like that. He has got it and he wants others also to have it. There is no selfishness there. There is no selfishness there. That is a symptom of a realized soul. That's the symptom of a realized soul. So you can see from the Upanishads and the Puranams also, this one particular point, how do you show that somebody is realized? These are the qualifications or characteristics of a person. They have realized the truth and they want others also to realize the truth. For example, 10 people are wandering around in a desert, 10 of them. One person has got some water to drink and that person is thinking, I got the water. Now, I don't want to sell this to others. That's not a very nice thing, isn't it? Everybody else is thirsty. So in the same way, he's saying to others also, there is a place, there is water there. And he has to shout loudly. And all great Mahatmas, they are in that mood. They want to give this to everybody else, but we have to be prepared to take it. That is the most important thing. So before the body drops away and we want to experience that before the body drops away. And before the body drops away, we want to experience that. And therefore they are saying, come and enjoy this knowledge of the self, realize this self. Because for the jnani, after he has realized the truth, his body is present in this world only for that purpose. Only for that purpose. So that is, you will see in the case of many many instances, they are all confirmed this. That, and that statement is not ahankaram. Normally you will address that as ahankaram. It is not ahankaram. It is not ahankriti, in other words. So here you will notice that when they say that, they don't say that I have got it. They say I've got it, Krishna's grace has come to me. That's how they will put it. They won't say that I got it on my own. It has come to me through Krishna's grace. So in this way, they are explaining that the realizations of the jnanis. So in these verses now, what Krishna is going to talk about from few verses from now onwards, this experience, that is experience of the jnani who has realized that truth in this way, with these symptoms, that is what is going to be spoken in the many verses now, what is going to come from here, which is addressed here as bhakti. Addressed here as bhakti. So, jnani, when he realizes certain things happen in this world, therefore Krishna gives importance to this Brahma Vidya above everything else. As far as Krishna is concerned, the highest welfare activity in this world is self-realization. If one realizes the self, that is Krishna's welfare activity to the world. He has fulfilled the, he himself has become perfect and he has fulfilled Krishna's desire. Therefore, that is the highest welfare activity. All other welfare activities are not considered as welfare activity at all, as far as Krishna is concerned. So, in order to stress that point, in the next few verses you will see, Krishna is saying again the nature of such a person, how he moves in this world. Vayu sarvatra go mahan. Like the air is moving, he has total freedom to go wherever he wants to go. Nothing can stop him from doing that because Krishna is moving him everywhere. Krishna is moving him everywhere. So we'll stop there today. We'll continue next Saturday. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.